And I think that if we focus more on ourselves and how we feel about ourselves and empowering ourselves and respecting and loving ourselves, it won't be necessary to dislike anyone. I do think, however, whatever we need to do, we need to stop having sex with white people. And I don't think that has anything to do with disliking them. I think it has to do with reducing the confusion and the contradiction. Because sex between non-whites and whites is a contradiction if anyone is seeking justice and liberation. You can't lay down with white supremacy at night and get up in the morning and fight it. It's just not going to happen.
A contradiction. Can you unpack that for us a little bit? A contradiction. Can you unpack that?
Sure. I'll just give you an example. If we were discussing just a few minutes ago about how black people will appease white people, how their behavior will change with white people, how we will say things, even agree with racist attitudes and things to appease them. We don't want them to think that we dislike them. We don't want them to think this or that. We put on these false faces, and we talk about that a lot in the book. The white identified black person, for example. And so now you've got this false face, and we can see it play out every day in our interactions. White people also wear a false face around us. So you've got these two people who traditionally and historically and routinely wear false faces with each other. Now they're coming together in a relationship. What is going to happen in that relationship, I believe, and in all of this is just my opinion, is you're going to have a falseness in that relationship. The black person is going to be trying to appease the white person by denying their reality. In order for them to get along with that white person, they have to deny their reality. Otherwise, there's going to be a conflict because even white people who get involved sexually or romantically with black people, they really don't want to know what you're going through. They really don't want to talk or hear about racism or white supremacy. They want you to pretend that you're not going through anything that puts their group, their race, in a bad light. So that means to get along with them, you have to deny who you are, what you are, your history, and everything else. Now imagine these people coming together in a relationship with these false faces. The black person, to me, is at great psychological risk when they have sex with or marry and date white people. Not because white people are bad people, but because racism, white supremacy creates a falseness in that relationship automatically. And I've watched people who think that they've risen above that, and they'll talk about racism, the liberal person. But in reality, if you listen closely enough, you can see that they really and truly are still, they still believe in white supremacy at the heart of it. So I personally think that if we have this falseness between us in very casual circumstances, what do you do when you get into a relationship?
And it may be, and I'm not unwilling to critically look at this, it may be just a personal desire on my part to find a, kind of soothing lotion so it doesn't feel so painful what it is that you're saying. So I'm not unwilling to look at that.
That was Dr. Eddie Moore Jr. He is a black male, admitted recovering victim of white supremacy, is the founder of the White Privilege Conference. Dr. Eddie Moore Jr. is married to an admitted racist white female. And I played that sound. I want to make very clear for everybody, Dr. Moore has been on this program twice. That sound clipped from the cat, and I have played that sound clip back to him and asked him his thoughts on it. So this is not gossiping. Just go back in the archives. You can listen to both programs. What is your view, a non-white person who is having sex with a white person or racist, admitted racist, and says, hey, we talk about racism. We're very honest. My white sex partner, we have discussions all the time. We work against racism, different organizations. She or he admits to being racist. reproductive work and it's not a contradiction. What would your response be?
I would say that that's the delusion of the whole that kind of relationship. What I found is common among some, not all necessarily, but I think most interracial relationships is those individuals usually, this is just my opinion, date one white person after another. And so, therefore, you know, that indicates a problem right there. Assuming that they haven't done that, I think that, again, the best that it can get, as Mr. Fuller once said, is tacky. And by tacky, I agree with that. I believe it's superficial. And I believe I've watched black people talk to people who consider themselves white liberals. And the talk is all good and fine. And, you know, we can all make things sound the way we want them to sound. But the behavior always says something else. If you watch that black person and that white person long enough or observe them over a extended period of time, you will see the falseness in it. You will see the best word I can think of is falseness. You will see it. I'll give you an example. I have a female relative who is married to a white man, and I remember being a child, and he was a very nice person. You know, there was nothing I could say bad about him as an individual human being. But I do remember this in particular when I was a child. One time this black man, and I forgot who he was, came by the house, and we were all at my mother's house, and my female relative was visiting with her husband. And this black male walked in. Well, her white husband had never seen him before, and I automatically saw the tension in him. I saw the hostility in him. And I remember as a child thinking, what was that? And I then, as I got older, I realized he didn't have any black male friends. No black males were ever around. And so I make that point to say that this was a very nice person. He was a liberal person. He was a person that had been on the battle line. I'm going to say the battle lines, but he had been involved in some of the protests of the 60s against racism. Yet and still, within him, there was this racism. So whether this gentleman that you mentioned and him and his wife talk about it, I've overheard these conversations throughout my life, and I'd have to say overall they're superficial and phony. And I believe they're a form of again, the black person and the white person in that dance of pretending to be something that they're not. And I think that quite honestly, you can't, I'll say it again, you cannot lay down with white supremacy at night and get up in the morning and fight it. Being in an interracial relationship automatically neutralizes black people's will to really fight it. And it also reduces your credibility.
Wait a minute now.
I would not follow them.
It reduces your credibility. You're going to have to deconstruct that a little bit.
Okay. When I say credibility, I mean your credibility as a non-white person seeking justice in a white supremacy system. When you can't free yourself of the hold that white supremacy has on you, how are you going to free anyone else?
The hold on me is just, I'm in a loving, matter of fact, I will pass the mic. You can say this better than myself, but homosexual.
And I make it clear to your listeners that in no way do I see these marriages as being anything other than legal, loving unions, and in no way do I think any of these marriages represent anything tragic. We should all be so lucky to be in relationships with people that love us.
Interesting.
That is Cheryl Judice, black female, and has never been mistreated because she is not white.
I'm sorry, excuse me, that last part broke up.
Racial marriage, white. Professor of She is the author of Interracial Marriages Between Black Women and white is a PhD of African American Studies at Northwestern University, and according to her own testimony, she has never been mistreated because she is not white.
Again, the falseness. I don't mean to insult anyone or particularly someone that's not here to defend themselves, but right then and there, I say on 3 points I would make about that is, one, she has a dog in the race. She believes possibly that it's to her benefit because the publishing companies love to publish books like that. The media loves to interview people like that. And for a black person who sounds like they're over the age of 21, who can actually say they've never been mistreated as a black person, in my opinion, automatically has zero credibility. That doesn't mean that she has zero credibility. Just in my opinion, that person could not advise me about anything to do with race if I was going to give my honest opinion. To say that these marriages are based on love, and some are, and I'm sure there are, but it's interesting that these marriages often have the highest failure rate. They end in divorce more often. We're working on the second book, which is about not about interracial relationships, but about black male, black female relationships. And during our research, we came across some interesting statistics, and one was that the divorce rate for black male, white female marriages was twice as high as white male, white female marriages, and higher than black male, black female marriages. So, what brings an interracial couple together in a society where race is everything, where we come to the table with preconceived notions of what race means? In a nation where white supremacy beauty standards are the norm, how can a black and white person come together and not come together and race not be part of it? And for those couples that race is not a part of it at all, because I do not believe in the concept of colorblind love, because you got to physically be blind, in my opinion, to not see the race of another individual. And in a white supremacy system, the race of an individual carries baggage. So when people claim that love is colorblind, what they're really saying is they're so color obsessed that they have to be in denial.
Again, one of the co-authors of Trojan Horde, Death of a Dark Nation, Pamela.
Make sure I get that one more time. Gusty Renegade. In for another broadcast, host of The Context of White Supremacy, The Cows. Hopefully in for another broadcast to share constructive information on what white supremacy racism is and how it works. Today's date, not into so-called holidays, but if that is a thing, Wednesday, March 17, 2021. So I have been told, I will say, I did see a report they were talking about how do they turn the Chicago River green for St. Patrick's Day, and we talked about that this time last year in reading about environmental racism, Sylvia Hood Washington, Dr. Sylvia Hood Washington packing them in. We talked about all that in Bubbly Creek, remember, last year. Anywho, before we get to our topic for this week, in the 12 years of the cows, frequently we have functioned, Gus T. specifically, in hosting the broadcast in a manner where, you know, hey, we broadcast, doesn't matter, all kinds of wacky things are happening, personal things can be happening to me and in life and all kinds of things, and we just kind of broadcast right on through it and keep rolling. So this is going to be one time where that is not the case. I said for the past year that things have been extraordinarily stressful and difficult for lots of people all over the world with all of the chaos and everything. But man, like, it was so crazy. If people, crazy isn't even an accurate term. If folks recall this past weekend, I was having difficulty even organizing where to begin with the list. There were so many things that happened, but it was also just, it was so traumatizing. Gus T, along with many other folks, I reckon over the last week, it's been dangerous for many reasons. They had the shooting in Atlanta today, but I think easily I could have died, I think, two different times over the past 7 days. And just like, wow, like this is crazy. Like I would love to say, or maybe it would be better to say, you know, I've been being reckless and out drag racing. Remember they had those reports last year that people were out drag racing up and down the street when they started closing things down and such, or doing other reckless activity. But that is not the case. I was out taking the trash. And almost, anyway, I can only say that this happened about 7 months, maybe a little more than 7 months from, I told you all last year, I went to check the mail and got accosted. White man, I didn't know if he was an enforcement officer or what have you, came up aggressively and accused me of looting mailboxes and all that, did a whole program about that. And then there were at least two or three other people where the same thing happened. So I had that one just going to check the mailbox and then just going to dump the trash where, dang, I could have died. Like, what in the world? Like, when I say hunker down, very dangerous times on the plantation, that's what I see every day, not just with the shooting that happened in Atlanta and all the other incidents that are happening worldwide. That's what I see on a personal level with what's happened in my life and what I observe in general. Like, wow, it looks substantially more dangerous than what I have observed recently or at any time, I'd say, in the last 4 or 5 years or so. But take things very seriously for lots of reasons. People are being very violent, aggressive. If you are out in public, I would be very alert. And I mean, out in public apparently means once you leave your front door, be very alert about what is happening around you. All of that said, I did not die despite all of the hazards. I did not die. So we are here to talk about Area 8, which is folks, many folks, one of their favorite areas of people activity to discuss. Man, there has been lots and lots to report. Even that shooting in Atlanta, suspected killer Robert Aaron Long, I believe is his name. What is it? Free white and 21 year old individual classified as white in custody, accused of killing 8 people, 6 of them non-white, so-called Asian. He said he's not racist. He has a sex addiction. And that's why he killed these people. Even that seems like it is somehow related to our subject matter for today. We started the broadcast. Make sure I get proper acknowledgement before we get to our guest. Man, the only reason our guest for today, the only reason that I have her contact information, she's been a guest on the program many times before, and we talked about her book. I wrote a review for her book. The only reason that we have had any sort of contact is because Pamela Evans Harris found out about her book. First of all, she was such a big supporter, she sleuthed for months to get contact information to be able to find her, get her, see if she'd be willing to be a guest on the program, which she was. But Pam, always a huge supporter of Miss Tate and her book. She referenced it all the time and tried to encourage other folks to read it. So I know she would be pleased. Can't have her on the program, yeah. Unfortunately. She's been gone now since 2018. But I know she would be pleased to have Renethia Tate on with us again to help try to make sense of some of the dangers. I guess that's really all I can say. Just keep emphasizing that word, like safety in a myriad of different forms, and the danger of being confused about racism, white supremacy, particularly when it comes to matters relating to sexual activity, the bedroom. Our guest for today's broadcast, she is the author of Pieces of a Puzzle, The One Thing Black Females Will Not Talk About. We, as I said, I wrote a review where I picked out some really choicey bits. You can check it out on my blog. Miss Tate has been with us many times before. And in fact, We'll get to the Meghan Markle thing, but as soon as that occurred, I said, wow, we should have Ms. Tate on the program to talk about all this with Meghan Markle. It's like, whoa, we did all that before, 2018. In the archives, we did all that. We talked about Serena Williams. She got married to a white man at the same time, co-founder of Reddit. We talked about the marriage and all of that, and the key word was fantasy. Ms. Tate emphasized that over and over. She said fantasy. We get conditioned by those fantasies and think that that white knight is going to come in and save the day and rescue us. And we just get set up for all we're going to hear this program. It's not going to be white knights coming in to rescue. It's just going to be one nightmare. One nightmare and one nightmare. Our guest for today's program, joining us once again, author of Pieces of a Puzzle, Miss Renethia Tate. Miss Tate, you're with us, ma'am.
Yes, and thanks a lot.
Thank you for sharing a bit.
I'm here.
Thank you for sharing a bit of your Wednesday evening. Always a pleasure to have you on the broadcast. For folks who maybe this is their first time hearing about your work, if it's anything you would like to share with listeners about Pieces of a Puzzle, maybe why they should check it out if this is their first time hearing about it.
Yeah, because black females, we keep secrets. So, and when you keep that secret, we are really hiding the racist. Like Markle, Meghan, she refused. She's holding a secret. She don't want to tell who said this about her baby being a darker color. And that's who we need to know. We need to know who the races are. But black females hide the races. We keep secrets. And we in a fantasy world. The girl, Aaliyah Taylor, that man reminded me of a fantasy. Sound like that was, she was in a big fantasy. And then she got choked. She got shocked. The system, she got shocked. Because, we don't read. We don't understand racism. We don't understand white men and how they think about us. So I say she was in a fantasy, and if she would have read the book, at least the book, if you don't believe what you hear or what you read, you at least come out of there being suspicious after you read the book. Black females should be suspicious of white men. Because I took the time out and talked to them, and they interested in white supremacy. So we don't understand white men. We don't understand. We don't understand ourselves, that we are in a fantasy world. So.
Fantasy, that word again, very important. The book again is Pieces of a Puzzle. You can check it out. It is available online, Amazon. Go get a copy if you have not added to your library. Mentions Neely Fuller Jr.
It's not with Amazon. You have to go to my website. Yeah, I'm not with Amazon anymore. You have to go to my website, which is secretsextalk.com. And then you'll see a picture of the book, and you can purchase it there online. And I'm going through PayPal.
Secret Sex Talk. SecretSexTalk.com. Go to the website, not Amazon. SecretSexTalk.com. Go to the website and you can get Pieces of a Puzzle, especially if you have some folks who are at home looking for material to read while they wait all this out. Add that one to the library. you mentioned in the book, she does, Miss Tate, she does speak with many other black females who've been in some of these tragic arrangements about some of their different experiences and even some of her own experiences. It is quite revealing. See the patterns. Before we get to Meghan Markle revisiting, if you will, Miss Tate mentioned Aaliyah Taylor. Now, this is one I saw just being in the Seattle area, and you can even contrast this now. Folks can remember, I think, Ray Rice, black male, 2014, horrible incident of domestic violence where he knocked his now wife unconscious, and it was on video. Really despicable. First time, last time, as Mr. Fuller says, but I mean, that became like national news for a long time. Everybody knew Ray Rice's name. They had the video playing constantly. I mean, black male savagery. Aaliyah Taylor, black female, right here in Seattle where Gusty Renegade is. Black female. Now, she is in a tragic arrangement with Chad Wheeler, also an NFL football player, right? They could have done the whole CTE and these savages get out here and do these aggressive, violent sports, and then they bring all that home and brutalize their. They could have done the same angle, right? O.J. Simpson and all. They didn't do that. Chad Wheeler with the Seattle Seahawks. This guy, wait a minute, let me go the other way. Aaliyah Taylor is 5'7", black female, less than 200 pounds. She didn't play any sports, to my knowledge, no hormone injection. Chad Wheeler, her white, shining white prince, gladiator for the Seattle Seahawks formerly, 6'7", 300 pounds.
Ooh.
I'm going to give you the video so you can get more detail about exactly what happened with Aaliyah Taylor and her 318-pound, 6'7" NFL boyfriend, white boyfriend. Just give that a little extra context as we proceed. We'll hear this audio segment and then get some thoughts. See if this sounds familiar to any of the interviews that Ms. Tate did. Context of white supremacy. This is Aaliyah Taylor, victim in every sense of the word, victim of white supremacy.
And for the very first time, the woman who says she was attacked by former Seattle Seahawks player Chad Wheeler is speaking out. Last week, you may recall, Wheeler pleaded not guilty to three charges, including domestic violence assault. His ex-girlfriend showed up in court to face him. She says that Wheeler is still a threat to her safety. And now she's sharing her story in an exclusive interview with CBS This Morning. She spoke with our national correspondent, Jerika Duncan. Good morning to you, Jerika.
Good morning to you, Gail. Her name is Aaliyah Taylor, and it was a leaked photo of her injuries that made national headlines. Well, now she's ready to share her story. And most importantly, she wants domestic violence survivors to know they're not alone. We want to warn you, some of what you're about to see and hear is graphic.
I still have to regularly get, like, my concussion checked. I have bolts and steel and a steel plate I'm going to have forever in my arm. I'm going to have to deal with this the rest of my life.
That's the reality for 27-year-old Aaliyah Taylor after she says she was attacked by her then-boyfriend Chad Wheeler. Taylor says the pair dated for 6 months with barely any arguments.
We were like best friends. We did everything together. I even introduced him to my family. We would babysit my nephew together.
But according to Taylor, that all changed on January 22nd, starting with a text from Wheeler that he'd shaved his head.
He loved this long hair, refused to cut it, and it surprised me and it worried me. I came home and Chad was trying to play it off as if he just kind of cut his hair. But then as time went on throughout the day, he started going downhill emotionally.
Taylor later told police it was the beginning of a manic episode, adding she knew Wheeler suffered from bipolar disorder. Then, according to Taylor, Wheeler snapped into a dark place.
He stood up and he told me to bow down and I asked him why, and he didn't respond. He just told me to bow down again, and I told him no, and he immediately grabbed my neck, and that's when things began.
Do you recall what happened after that?
When he grabbed my neck, he threw me on the bed. And I remember looking up at him and asking him, please stop, Chad. It's me. And I just immediately knew the look in his eyes. That was it.
Taylor, who is 5'9", says that's when Wheeler, 6'7", weighing more than 300 pounds, tried to choke her. According to Taylor, she blacked out twice before the attack was over.
I had touched my face, and I looked down, and there was blood on my hand. And I remember getting up and running to the bathroom. Chad was standing by the bed, by the doorway, and he was sipping his smoothie. And it's like, wow, you're still alive.
Please help me now. I'm gonna die.
Taylor says she then locked herself in the bathroom, called 911, and texted her family and Wheeler's father for help. According to police reports, it took three officers and two sets of handcuffs to restrain Wheeler. Police said Wheeler kept apologizing as he was arrested.
Do you think that Chad's behavior is directly connected to a mental health issue?
To be honest, I don't know. He went and ate dinner after doing this to me, and he didn't take the same approach with the cops as he did with me.
The Seahawks dropped Wheeler, saying the team strongly condemns this act of domestic violence. If convicted, Wheeler faces 8 to 12 years in prison. Last week, he pleaded not guilty to two domestic violence-related charges and one count of resisting arrest. Taylor was in the courtroom.
Why was it so important for you to appear in court?
I didn't want him to think that he had that power over me, that I wasn't going to defend myself. And I thought, how easy would that be for him and his legal team to be able to say whatever they want without having to look me in the eye?
Do you think he should serve prison time for what he did to you?
Yes. Yes. I definitely do think that he should. I have to say, the hardest part of all this wasn't the surgeries, wasn't any of that. It was getting a call from my niece and nephews. They thought they had lost me. And the pain in their voice, I will never forget that. I will never forget that.
And she doesn't want her story to be forgotten either.
How grateful are you to be alive?
Beyond grateful. I really feel like God has blessed me with another chance, and I want to try to use the time I've been blessed with to help other people and to get this story out and make sure people don't feel alone and that this doesn't happen again.
CBS News reached out to the attorneys for Chad Wheeler. They declined to comment on the case. Wheeler's trial is set to begin in Washington State in April. A reminder, if you need help related to domestic violence or mental health, we've posted free resources on our website, cbsnews.com. A lot of strength exhibited by this young lady.
Yes, very brave.
So important, so powerful that she's speaking up, and especially the pictures, Derek, are heartbreaking. And you look at the numbers, her height, his height, her weight, his weight.
6'7", 5'9",
A terrifying change in his demeanor.
Yes.
A shift, 6 months of dating, and then suddenly that?
Yeah, she said not even an argument. You could tell she was very conflicted because she cared so much about him.
Yeah.
But this is one of those difficult stories to tell because it's not just the domestic violence, but also recognizing that there is a mental health component in this.
Yes, it's interesting that she had to say to him at one point, Chad, it's me.
It's me.
Right.
Although
it's me.
As a matter of mental health awareness, being bipolar does not mean you beat up your family members.
Exactly. It's a very
something else
point.
Going on here.
All right. Jerika, thank you very much. Context of white supremacy. First time, last time. And we have, over the last year, played a lot of reports about increases where they've said there have been lots of reports, indicators that there have been tremendous increases in domestic violence over the past 12 months, lots of stress, increases in violence in general. People are stuck in the house, and that can lead to a lot of anxiety, being targeting others who are in a weak position, that sort of thing, people that you are around. So this is something to take serious for a lot of reasons. And thinking about the whole, being in some sort of arrangement with someone, safety,
that's going to be a big theme. Safety. Maybe that is the theme for the broadcast. Safety. Safety. Before I get Ms. Tate's thoughts, it's been a stressful year, and when you're under a lot of stress, you don't think as well sometimes. This 6'7", 318-pound white man did not exactly comply with the enforcement officers. They said they had to use three officers and two sets of handcuffs to subdue Wheeler. Now, I did gloss over that. What made me pause, I saw the body cam video of his arrest. He did not comply. Now, can you imagine a 6'7", 318-pound black male? Oh, this is a tragic. With a white woman that he has nearly choked to death, and the officers come to check, and he doesn't comply. We might be talking about the deceased Mr. Wheeler, pending on, it is O.J. Simpson, so, yeah, but I don't know. O.J. complied. Like, you don't comply? 6'7", 318, and it's like they're having to tussle with him, like there's body, I will have to post the body. I just saw that today. I was trying to be prepared for the broadcast. Like I said, they didn't make this a big now. Imagine that if it had been a black male and he decided to do all this and then tussle with the arresting. Anyway, Ms. Tate, did you have thoughts on what you heard from Aaliyah Taylor?
Well, she is lucky. I hope she says she want to help some people. She got to help herself and understand what kind of world we in and understand white men. Yeah, that's what we need. That's what she needs, to read the book, understand, to get an understanding of who you're dealing with. Because we just, we're girls. Yeah, in a fantasy world. So that's all I say.
What did
you mean? If we would pick up a book.
What did you make of this terroristic attack? I think she said before he got physical, he told her to bow down.
Right. Yeah, and then he cut his hair. That reminds me of the skinheads. Because they, I guess he turned into his real self.
Be mindful. I think Mr. Fuller encourages asking 200 questions. It can be really dangerous when you are not aware of the person that you're with and what type of tendencies they might have. Like, wow. And clearly, Gusty Renegade, like none of us, we do not understand what it means to be classified as white. We are still learning. And man, sometimes that's another big theme for today's broadcast, not understanding what it means to be classified as white has consequences. Wow. Mental health consequences, sometimes lethal consequences. Theme for today. Anything else that you wanted to say about Ms. Taylor before we move transition? Really the same story, Meghan Markle and Prince Harry.
Yeah, well, I guess that's what I said about Taylor. So, yeah, I guess I'm finished with her. She just, she just lucky. It's a second chance, she said, that she was given. So let's hope that she seek out information, or just tell people what went on in the bedroom. Tell that.
Do you have suspicions that
there may have been some signs that, wait a minute, this guy might have some problems. There might be some danger just by their bed. Dr. Welsing used to talk about that all the time. She would say, tell me what you do in the bedroom, what you do with your genitals, and I'll tell you what you think about yourself. She used to say that on a regular basis. But you have some thoughts that there might have been sexual perversions?
Say what now?
I said, do you have some suspicions that there might have been some kind of incorrect sexual activity going on?
Well, the fact of the matter is we won't talk about our sexual experience with white men. And that's what my book is all about. Well, you get, at least you get a chance to learn a little something about the white man, the way he thinks, or the way they think. Yeah. So that's what I hope for, Miss Taylor, that she pick up a book and find a way to pick up something where she can learn, where she can help herself, you know, she got to be warned. But it's like saying the water is hot. And then little kids say they don't believe the water is hot until they stick their hand in it. And that's when that's how I feel about Aaliyah Taylor. We told her that the water was hot, but she stuck her hand in it anyway. And it's sad that black people have to experience this race stuff before you just have to experience it before we would believe it's real. And that's all I had to say on Leah.
Context of White Supremacy, author Renethia Tate, her book Pieces of a Puzzle. This could be a chapter in the book. I mean, it's pretty similar. One thing I thought, she was talking about her children, and I think they had been together for a few months. So, I mean, that's something else, like, to be mindful, like, wow, having these people around your family and offspring, like, he could have, you know, harmed them, or just, you know, lots of things to consider when.
Yeah, we just don't know. We don't understand. We just don't understand. And it's, you know, information is out there. There's no excuse, because the information is out there. There's no excuse at all. There's no way she should have walked into that situation there. But black people, we don't read.
Well, I do think in the system of white supremacy, I don't know if it qualifies as an excuse, but I do think white people are very good at confusing us. Unless I've been misinformed, they don't make pieces of a puzzle required reading. I didn't read that in school or have to do any reports on that. And in fact, it was kind of difficult to obtain my copy of Pieces of a Puzzle. So I think white people can make it difficult to get that info at times. But pushing, as I said, same story, just different names, and happening in a different, which we emphasize, global system of white supremacy. This is not just a U.S. problem. This is not just the South Africa problem. This is the entire known universe. So we're moving from my neck of the woods, Seattle, Washington, which also, I'm not sure if Ms. Taylor was like born in Washington State, but that I would say is a huge impact, because if she is, then you're growing up in an environment where she's probably not around a lot of black people. I know they mentioned Tacoma, which is a little bit south of Seattle. There's slightly more black people there, but still, that would probably have a big... If I had grown up in Seattle, we would not be having this program. There would not be a context of white supremacy, because I would have probably grown up with lots of white, or even some white friends and homies. Like, I just would not have been a Gusty Renegade if I had been born in Seattle. But that's another topic. Global problem. All we're doing is switching. We're hopping the pond to talk about the exact same scenario. Now, we had Ms. Tate on the broadcast in 2018 when Meghan Markle, Prince Harry, got married.
talked about pieces of a puzzle, the fantasy, exactly what you heard today. Black people being confused about racism and all of the fairy tales. We think the prince with the long hair, that's what she said about Chad Wheeler, got those long golden locks. He wasn't blonde, but, you know, that's what she said. That we've been confused, you know, we've been brain trashed into all of these fairy tale notions about what it's like and to be with a white person, and maybe we'll avoid being mistreated and they'll save us from all of this. And then the reality, the nightmare hits. So we are now not quite 3 years, about 2.5 years into Meghan Markle, Prince Harry, and wow, it hits front and center. Oprah Winfrey gets millions of viewers to tune into this interview, and racism ends up becoming the dominant theme. And I even have to pause here. This broadcast would have been about a billion times better if things had not been so stressful, and or if Gus T were about 10 years older. I do not like being reckless with quotes. I say all the time, strive for accuracy. Racists, the system of white supremacy is maintained primarily by deception, keeping us confused. Miss Taylor, all of us, keeping us confused. Meghan Markle, keeping us confused about what is happening, primarily with people classified as white and racism. But I think it's so important just recognizing, trying to be accurate. And this program would have been so much better. Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, she talked all the time. Why do white people practice racism, white supremacy, white genetic annihilation? She said that about every time she did a broadcast. She was here 31 times, anytime. Every time she spoke, all the times with Mr. Fuller, she would say Mr. Fuller gives, you know, mechanics on how to neutralize racism, white supremacy, what to do about it. I talk about why. Why are they doing this? Working that through in our brain computer so we can be less confused and on our cosmic assignment. Dr. Welsing did a lecture at the Welsing Institute, which went on for like 30 years or so, maybe even longer than that. She did a lecture at the Welsing Institute where she said, it was in like late 90s, I believe, maybe early 2000, but I think late 90s. She said, Princess Diana, Dodie Fayed, oh man, lots of concern, controversy about, oh wow, he's kind of dark. I don't think he's a white person. Then they're engaged. Oh my goodness. Same questions that are going to come up that we're hearing some of the snippets from the interview. But Dr. Welsing talked about all of this, and I suspect I wouldn't be quoting, I would just be pressing play. But it's difficult because there's so many archives and all the rest of it. And again, I caught this kind of in passing. I was not paying attention to racism, white supremacy. I was a child when Princess Diana was assassinated or killed or whatever, however you want to theorize about all that. So it does not have that resonance to me, but I just heard the archive of her talking about it. I tried to recover. I failed. This would have been so much better because you would have heard Dr. Welsing talking, addressing this exactly. She says that all the time, white genetic annihilation is why we have this problem. Racism, white supremacy, white genetic annihilation. Which is, white is right, black get back, yellow is mellow, but white is right. Brown, stick around. I got the other one. We'll get audio segment number one. So this aired roughly 10 days ago. Again, Oprah Winfrey, her interview that shook up the planet, it seems, has the entire world. I said from George Floyd to Meghan Markle, the entire world talking about the problem. And then with the shooting today, that was the hashtag on Twitter. It had like 250,000 folks trending, white supremacy. More focus, more clarity. Hopefully we can get more non-white people who are less confused. So we'll get audio segment number one. This is Meghan Markle and Oprah. Prince Harry comes later. Meghan Markle, Oprah Winfrey sharing a word or two about what has caused some of the problems that led them to leave their official duties with the royal family. We'll get clip one, and then I'll hush and we'll hear from Ms. Tate, context of white supremacy.
Separate from that, what was happening behind closed doors was, you know, we knew I was pregnant. We now know it's Archie, and it was a boy. We didn't know any of that at the time. we can just talk about it as Archie now. And that was when they were saying they didn't want him to be a prince or a princess, not knowing what the gender would be, which would be different from protocol, and that he wasn't going to receive security.
What?
It was really hard.
What do you mean?
He wasn't going to receive security. This went on for the last few months of our pregnancy, where I'm going, hold on a second.
That your son and Harry, Prince Harry's son, was not going to receive security?
That's right. I know.
How does that work?
How does that work? It's like, no. Because if he's not going to be a prince, it's like, okay, well, he needs to be safe. So we're not saying don't make him a prince or a princess, whatever it's going to be. But if you're saying the title is what's going to affect their protection, we haven't created this monster machine around us in terms of clickbait and tabloid fodder. You've allowed that to happen, which means our son needs to be safe.
So how do they explain to you that your son, the grandson, the great-grandson of the queen, mm-hmm. is not going to have, he wasn't going to be a prince? How do they tell you that? And what reasons do they give? And then say, and so therefore you don't need protection.
There's no explanation. There's no version. I mean, that's the other piece
of it. Who tells you that?
I heard a lot of it through Harry and then other parts of it through conversations with family members. And it was a decision that they felt was appropriate. And I thought, well...
Was him being called a prince, Archie being called a prince, was that important to you?
If it meant he was going to be safe, then of course. All the grandeur surrounding this stuff is an attachment that I don't personally have, right? I've been a waitress, an actress, princess, a duchess. I've always just still been Meghan, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, I'm clear on who I am, independent of that stuff. And the most important title I will ever have is mom. I know that. But the idea of our son not being safe, and also the idea of the first member of color in this family not being titled in the same way that other grandchildren would be. You know, the other piece of that conversation is there's a convention, I don't know if it's George V or George VI convention, that when you're the grandchild of the monarch, so when Harry's dad becomes king, automatically Archie and our next baby would become prince or princess or whatever they're going to be.
So for you, it's about protection and safety, not so much as what the title means.
That's
to
a
the
huge
world.
Piece of it,
and that having the title gives you the safety and protection.
Yeah, but also it's not their right to take it away.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think even with that convention I'm talking about, while I was pregnant, they said they want to change the convention for Archie. Well, why?
Did you get an answer?
No.
You still don't have an answer?
No.
You know, we had heard the world, those of us out here reading the things or hearing the things, that it was you and Harry who didn't want Archie to have a prince title. So you're telling me that is not true?
No, and it's not our decision to make, right? Mm-hmm. Even though I have a lot of clarity on what comes with the titles, good and bad, and from my experience, a lot of pain. Mm-hmm. I, again, wouldn't wish pain on my child, but that is their birthright to then make a choice about.
Okay. So it feels to me like things started to change when you and Harry decided that you were not going to take the picture that had been a part of the tradition for years. And
we weren't asked to take a picture. That's also part of the spin that was really damaging. I thought, can you just tell them the truth? Can you say to the world, you're not giving him a title? And we want to keep him safe, and that if he's not a prince, then it's not part of the tradition. Just tell people, and then they'll understand.
Mm-hmm.
But they wouldn't do that.
But you both obviously were aware that that had been a part of the tradition. And there was there a specific reason why you didn't want to be a part of that tradition? I think many people interpreted that as you were both saying, we're going to do things our way, or we're going to do things in a different way.
That's not it at all. I mean, I think what was really hard. So picture now that you know what was going on behind the scenes, right? There was a lot of fear surrounding it. I was very scared of having to offer up our baby knowing that they weren't going to be kept safe.
You certainly must have had some conversations with Harry about it and have your own suspicions as to why they didn't want to make Archie a prince. What are those thoughts? Why do you think that is? Do you think it's because of his race? And I know that's a loaded question, but...
But I can give you an honest answer. In those months when I was pregnant, all around this same time, so we have in tandem the conversation of he won't be given security, he's not going to be given a title, and also concerns and conversations about how dark his skin might be when he's born.
What?
And...
Who is having that conversation with you? What?
So,
there is a conversation. Hold up.
There are several conversations.
There's a conversation with you.
With Harry.
About how dark your baby is going to be?
Potentially, and what that would mean or look like.
Ooh. And you're not going to tell me who had the conversation?
I think that would be very damaging to them.
Okay. So how does one have that meeting?
That was relayed to me from Harry. Those were conversations that family had with him. And I think...
Whoa.
It was really hard to be able to see those as compartmentalized conversations.
They were concerned that if he were too brown, that would be a problem. Are you saying that?
I wasn't able to follow up with why, but that if that's the assumption you're making, I think that feels like a pretty safe one. Which was really hard to understand, right? Especially when, look, the Commonwealth is a huge part of the monarchy, and I lived in Canada, which is a Commonwealth country, for 7 years, but it wasn't until Harry and I were together that we started to travel through the Commonwealth, I would say 60-70% of which is people of color, right? And growing up as a woman of color, as a little girl of color, I know how important representation is. I know how you want to see someone who looks like you in certain positions.
Obviously.
Even Archie, like we read these books and now there's one line and one goes, if you can see it, you can be it. And he goes, you can be it. And I think about that so often, especially in the context of these young girls, but even grown women and men who, when I would meet them in our time in the Commonwealth, how much it meant to them to be able to see someone who looks like them in this position. And I could never understand how it wouldn't be seen as an added benefit. And a reflection of the world today, at all times, but especially right now, to go, how inclusive is that you can see someone who looks like you in this family, much less one who's born into it?
White genetic annihilation, Dr. Frances Cress-Welsing. Your thoughts on the lack of security and too dark of a child, Ms. Tate?
Well, they worried about that baby she having. They wonder if that baby gonna be black. Yeah, and it could too. Could be a little darker. Because that's the way these genes work. You don't know how they work, you know. So it could be, that baby could come out a little darker. And then what's she gonna do? Yeah, but Megan keeping secrets. Black females keep secrets. And Megan is keeping a secret. She's not going to tell who the racist is. The one that, you know, that talked about her baby being dark. So, we keep secrets. And that's not good.
That does happen frequently.
So,
I'm sorry, didn't mean to cut you.
Yeah. And so she was shocked, too, you know, because we don't understand how white people think. And at least we can learn something. We can learn how white people think and how the racists think, not white people, the racists. Yeah, you can learn that. So, well, Megan, I guess she telling it all now. Call herself telling it, telling the truth. You know, she was in a fantasy too, and now she's looking at they're looking at her color. So I guess that's shocking for her.
Color of both she and her unborn child, she says. And I just wanted to point out, I think several, or at least I can speak for myself. I was surprised because they were frequently in this interview. They were not saying race. Or white privilege or what have you, they were frequently saying racism, which is kind of rare for people to be although white supremacy was trending, as I said today, but they at one point they said, or Oprah Winfrey, she asked and she said, well, you think, you know, why do you think they were removing security? Black babies cost less. Why would you think they were removing security and all the rest? Because of his race? And it, Dr. Welsing and Mr. Fuller, there's only one race, I guess it would be more codified, more accurate, because he is not white, because you are not white, that would be getting more accurate. Now we're getting right to what the problem is. Mistreat people who are not white. Mistreat people who are not white. That's what all of this is about all over the world. Let's see. We will, and she even loaded, I don't know what a loaded question is, but when it gets to racism, like, ooh, we get to keeping secrets and loaded, I mean, wow, it gets really serious when we get to talking about racism. So let's move along. Clip number two, again, this is just Oprah Winfrey and Meghan Markle. Prince Harry will join them a little later.
When Meghan joined the royal family in 2018, she became the target of unrelenting, pervasive attacks.
Racist abuse online aimed at Meghan Markle.
There were undeniable racist overtones. This stands apart from the kind of coverage we've seen of any other royal.
There was constant criticism, blatant sexist and racist remarks by British tabloids and internet trolls.
We have seen the racism towards her play out in real time.
Referring to her as straight out of Compton.
The daily onslaught of vitriol and condemnation from the UK press became overwhelming and, in Meghan's words, almost unsurvivable.
You said in a podcast that it became almost unsurvivable. And that struck me because it sounds like you were in some kind of mental trouble. What was actually going on? Almost unsurvivable sounds like there was a breaking point.
Yeah, there was. I just didn't see a solution. I would sit up at night and I was just like, I don't understand how all of this is being churned out. And again, I wasn't seeing it, but it's almost worse when you feel it through the expression of my mom or my friends or them calling me crying, just like, Meg, they're not protecting you. And I realized that it was all happening just because I was breathing. Mm. And look, I was really ashamed to say it at the time and ashamed to have to admit it to Harry, especially, because I know how much loss he suffered.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew that if I didn't say it, that I would do it. And I just didn't want to be alive anymore. And that was a very clear and real and frightening constant thought. And I remember how he just cradled me and I was I went to the institution and I said that I needed to go somewhere to get help. I said that I've never felt this way before and I need to go somewhere. And I was told that I couldn't, that it wouldn't be good for the institution. And I called.
So the institution is never a person, or is it a series of people?
No, it's a person.
It's a person.
It's several people, but I went to one of the most senior people to get help. And that, you know, I share this because there are so many people who are afraid to voice that they need help. And I know personally how hard it is to not just voice it, but when you voice it, to be told no. Oof. And so I went to human resources and I said, I need help, because in my old job, there was a union and they would protect me. And I remember this conversation like it was yesterday, because they said, my heart goes out to you because I see how bad it is, but there's nothing we can do to protect you because you're not a paid employee of the institution. This wasn't a choice. This was emails and begging for help, saying very specifically, I am concerned for my mental welfare. And people going, oh, yes, yes, it's disproportionately terrible what we see out there to anyone else, but nothing was ever done. So we had to find a solution.
Wow. I don't want to be alive anymore.
I thought it would have solved everything for everyone, right?
So were you thinking of harming yourself? Were you having suicidal thoughts?
Yes. This was very, very clear.
Wow.
Very clear and very scary. And, you know, I didn't know who to even turn to in that. Mm. And one of the people that I reached out to, who's continued to be a friend and confidant, was one of my husband's mom's best friends, one of Diana's best friends. Because it's like, who else could understand what it's actually like on the inside?
Did you ever think about going to a hospital, or is that possible that you can check yourself in someplace?
No, that's what I was asking to do.
Yeah.
You can't just do that. I couldn't, you know, call an Uber to the palace.
Yeah.
You couldn't just go. You couldn't. I mean, you have to understand as well, which when I joined that family, that was the last time until we came here that I saw my passport, my driver's license, my keys, all that gets turned over. I didn't see any of that anymore.
Well, the way you're describing this, it's like you were trapped and couldn't get help, even though you're on the verge of suicide. That's what you are describing. That's what I'm hearing.
Yes.
And that would be an accurate interpretation. Yes.
That's the truth.
That's the truth.
You know, and if you think about, it was one of the things that it still haunts me is this photograph that someone had sent me. We had to go to an official event. We had to go to this event at the Royal Albert Hall. And a friend said, I know you don't look at pictures, but oh my God, you guys look so great.
Yeah.
And sent it to me. And I zoomed in. And what I saw was the truth of what that moment was. Because right before we had to leave for that, I had just had that conversation with Harry that morning. And it was the next day that I talked to the institution.
You had the conversation, I don't want to be alive anymore?
Yeah.
Oof.
No, and it was like, these are the thoughts that I'm having in the middle of the night that are very clear.
Clarification.
And I'm scared because this is very real. This isn't some abstract idea. This is methodical, and this is not who I am. But we had to go to this event, and I remember him saying, I don't think you can go. And I said, I can't be left alone.
Because you were afraid of what you might do to yourself?
And we went. And that,
I'm so sorry to hear that.
And that picture, if you zoom in, what I see is how tightly his knuckles are gripped around mine. You can see the whites of our knuckles because we are smiling and doing our job, but we're both just trying to hold on. And every time that those lights went down in that royal box, I was just weeping. And he was gripping my hand, and then it was, okay, intermission's coming. lights are about to come on, everyone's looking at us again, and you have to just be on again.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, so important for people to remember, is you have no idea what's going on for someone behind closed doors. You have no idea. Even the people that smile the biggest smiles and shine the brightest lights, it seems, to have compassion for what's actually potentially going on.
No, the public is looking at you, and to think that you earlier in the day had said to Harry that you didn't want to be alive anymore.
Yeah, and just hours before, just sitting on the steps in our cottage, just sitting there, and then going, okay, well, go upstairs and put your makeup bag in your sink and try to pull yourself together.
Well, nobody should have to go through that. And you know, Harry and I are working on this mental health series for Apple. And we hear a lot of these stories. Nobody should have to go through that.
It takes so much courage to admit that you need help.
Mm-hmm.
It takes so much courage to voice that. As I said, I was ashamed. I'm supposed to be stronger than that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to put more on my husband's shoulders. He's carrying the weight of the world. I don't want to bring that to him. I bring solutions.
Mm-hmm.
To admit that you need help, to admit how dark of a place you're in.
Context of white supremacy. Again, dark place. Words are important.
Yes.
Before I get Ms. Tate, Pamela Evans Harris, that's how we even got in contact, found out about Ms. Tate's excellent work. Pamela Evans Harris, I was playing audio from her first visit at the beginning of the broadcast, and she said, there is a falseness in these arrangements, tragic arrangements, she said, because the white person is not being honest about things. And so they're pretending as though, you know, they're really concerned about your trials and tribulations, about racism and all that. And then the non-white person, victim, a lot of times they're having to pretend that racism is not an issue. They don't want to upset the white person, that sort of thing. So she said there is a falseness about all of these. Ooh-wee. That is exactly what I just heard, I believe, having to do a whole lot of faking when racism is causing life-threatening problems. Thoughts on segment number two, Ms. Tate?
Well, I just think she said she was afraid. I think that she was in a fantasy at the time of her marriage. And I think now they didn't pull that rug away from him. And now she's kind of left out there. Knowing now that a color is important, your skin color is important to white people, to racist white people. So, yeah, they pulled the rug away from her. And, did he pull that rug? She was in that fantasy for a while. And then they pulled that black and white issue on her. So naturally, she would be shocked. Well, that's how I see it with Megan.
How does what she said about the toll that this took on her mental health, how does that compare to the research that you did and talking with these black females who were in these arrangements and how it impacted their mental health?
Yeah, the main thing is that what we need to do, which black females already do when we grow up, just talking about it is very important. And holding stuff in, that's not constructive. So talking about it is something that is constructive, and it helps you mentally. Yeah, because see, she said they wanted, she wanted to hurt herself. See, that's, now you need to see somebody. It's just all messed up. She's just all confused. It's just all messed up. Now, you know, Megan is all confused. Because no one taught her about race. She thought, you know, oh, you know, her mother is married to a white man, or was, you know, married to a white man. So Megan know how the white side of her family act. So, yeah, now she has to have some therapy behind all this. And what about her husband? He ain't protecting her. Don't sound like to me, just threw her out there in the wilderness. Don't seem like he's protecting her or anything like that. You know, and he just let her go out there and let the vultures get her.
She said she didn't have any support. You know, she went to human resources and was telling, you know, her family and such, and there just was no help. I guess we'll hear from him directly, but, you know, she says pretty explicitly, yeah, there was no assistance for her. Yeah, but let's get to Prince Harry. Mm. Clip number 3, he starts to answer some of these questions about support and what was his role in all of this. Prince Harry joins Oprah Winfrey, his wife, Meghan Markle, context of white supremacy.
And I think the biggest turning point for me was and it didn't take very long, so it was actually right at the beginning, was, okay, this union, us, me being, having a girlfriend, was going to be a thing. Of course it was. But I never expected, or I never thought...
Because she was a mixed race?
No, just the two of us to start with. I hadn't really thought about the mixed race piece because I thought, well, firstly, you know, I've spent many years doing the work mm-hmm. and doing my own learning. But my upbringing and the system of which I was brought up in and what I've been exposed to, I wasn't aware of it to start with. But my God, it doesn't take very long to suddenly become aware of it.
Yeah, because you said you really weren't aware of unconscious bias and all that represents until you met me.
Yeah, sad as it is to say, it takes living in her shoes, in this instance, for a day or those first 8 days to see where it was going to go and how far they were going to take it.
And get away with it.
And get away with it and be so blatant about it. That's the bit that shocked me. We're talking about the UK press here, right? And the UK is my home. That is where I was brought up. So, yes, I've got my own relationship that goes back a long way with the media. I asked for calm from the British tabloids, once as a boyfriend, once as a husband, and then once as a father.
Okay, so now we're here from Prince Harry. What do you make of that? He says he was not aware, you know, he grew up within the system, and he had to do some learning to catch up on what this whole interracial relationship thing was going to be like.
Yeah, he might be telling the truth. He might. Kind of see what it's like being in her shoes. Yeah, but she just confused. It's a lot of confusion. That's how they keep white supremacy going. They got to keep a large number of us confused, so that they can keep going, doing so we won't think about nothing else but crazy stuff. Yeah, so that's what I see. I feel, you just kind of feel kind of bad for her because she just didn't know, this ignorance. Oh, black people.
Victims of white supremacy.
Yeah, just ignorant.
That is one of the consequences. Let's see. He goes into a little more detail, Prince Harry, and then we'll nab some of the questions. We should have, hopefully,
our Global Sunday Talk on Racism this weekend. So it'll be interesting to hear from some of the folks in the UK to hear their thoughts on how all of this has transpired and all the like. But this is our segment number four. As I said, Prince Harry going into a bit more detail.
Of admitting that Meghan needed help.
Yeah. I have no idea. It's a very trapping environment that a lot of them are stuck in.
You were ashamed of admitting that Meghan needed help.
Yeah. Hmm. And I didn't have anyone to turn to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got some very close friends that have been with us through this whole process.
Hmm.
But for the family, they very much have this mentality of, this is just how it is. This is how it's meant to be. You can't change it. We've all been through it.
We've all been through the pressure. We've all been through being
yes, but what was different
exploited.
For me, what was different for me was the race element, because now it wasn't just about her, but it was about what she represents. And therefore, it wasn't just affecting my wife. It was affecting so many other people as well. And that was the trigger for me to really engage in those conversations with senior palace staff and with my family to say, guys, this is not going to end well.
And when you say end well, what did you mean?
For anyone, it's not going to end well, because the way that I saw it was, there is a way of doing things, but for us, for this union and the specifics around her race, there was an opportunity, many opportunities, for my family to show some public support. And I guess one of the most telling parts, and the saddest parts, I guess, was over 70 members of parliament, female members of parliament, both Conservative and Labour, came out and called out the colonial undertones of articles and headlines written about Meghan. Yet no one from my family ever said anything over those 3 years. That hurts. But I also am acutely aware of where my family stand and how scared they are of the tabloids turning on them.
Turning on them for what? They're the royal family.
Yes, but it's there is this invisible, what's termed or referred to as the invisible contract behind closed doors between the institution and the tabloids, UK tabloids.
How so?
Well, it is to simplify it. It's a case of if you as a family member are willing to wine, dine, and give full access to these reporters, then you will get better press.
What do you care about better press if you're royal?
I think everyone needs to have some compassion for them in that situation, right? There is a level of control by fear that has existed for generations. I mean, generation.
But who's
after
controlling
generation after generation.
Whom? Mm. It's the institution. From our point of view, just the public, it's.
Yeah,
it's,
but the institution survives based on that perception.
So you're saying there's this relationship that Meghan was speaking of. It's like symbiotic. One lives or thrives because the other exists.
Mm.
That's what you're saying.
That's the idea.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, I think there's a reason that these tabloids have holiday parties at the palace. They're hosted by the palace. The tabloids are. You know, there is a construct that's at play there. And because from the beginning of our relationship, they were so attacking and inciting so much racism, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, it changed the risk level, because it wasn't just catty gossip. It was bringing out a part of people that was racist in how it was charged.
Mm-hmm.
And that changed the threat, that changed the level of death threats, that changed everything.
So tell me this. You said a moment ago, it hurts that your family has never acknowledged the role that racism played in here. Did you think she was well received in the beginning?
Yes, far better than I expected. But, you know, my grandmother has been amazing throughout. You know, my father, my brother, Kate, and all the rest of the family, they were really welcoming. But it really changed after the Australia tour, after our South Pacific tour.
That's when we announced we were pregnant with Archie. That was our first tour.
But it was also the first time that the family got to see how incredible she is at the job. And that brought back memories.
I'm thinking because I watched The Crown, okay? I watched The Crown. Do you all watch The Crown?
I've watched some of it. We've watched some of it.
We've watched some of it.
But there is this, I think it was the fourth season, actually, where there's an Australian tour. So is that what you're talking about? It brought back memories of that, the Australian tour, yeah. Where your father and your mother went there and your mother was bedazzling. So are you saying that there were hints of jealousy?
Look, I just wish that we would all learn from the past. But to see how effortless it was for Meghan to come into the family so quickly in Australia and across New Zealand, Fiji and Tonga, and just be able to connect with people in such a... No, I know. But it's...
Why wouldn't everybody love that? Isn't that what you want? You want her to come into the family and to, as the Queen said at one point, the way that Meghan had basically, yeah. Not her words, but assimilated into the family.
Yeah, I think, as we talked about, she was very much welcomed into the family, not just by the family, but by the world, yeah. Certainly by the Commonwealth. Mm-hmm. I mean, here you have one of the greatest assets to the Commonwealth that the family could have ever wished for.
I just can't, I'm kind of going back to this. So then you're in Canada because you had stepped back, your firm says you're no longer going to have protection. So did you ask for that? Because were you trying to have it both ways? You wanted to step back, but also keep your foot in royal business, it seems.
It's interesting that you talk about it being, have it both ways. On the security element, I never thought that I would have my security removed because I was born into this position and I inherited the risk. Mm-hmm. So that was a shock to me. That was what completely changed the whole plan.
So
not that we had a plan.
You, as Prince Harry, yeah. Mm-hmm. are going to have your security removed.
Yeah, and I even wrote letters to his family saying, please, it's very clear the protection of me or Archie is not a priority. I accept that. That is fine. Please keep my husband safe. I see the death threats. I see the racist propaganda. Please keep him safe. Mm. Please don't pull his security and announce to the world when he and we are most vulnerable. And they said it's just not possible.
Mm-hmm. Context of white supremacy. So we get quite a bit there. Racism again, front and center. What do you make of what we heard from, I guess, both of them?
Well, I just think he's not really protecting her from his family. he's not protecting Meghan. And she's talking suicidal. And it's all messed up. She's all confused. Yeah, it's just sad. It's just sad.
What do you think Prince Harry is not doing to protect her that he should be doing?
Talking to his family members, calling out the racists, call them out. Who's the one who talked about the color? I'm not saying that Harry would do that, but that's a start. They can at least bring out the racists. Let us know who the racist is. Yeah. That's how I see it.
No harboring secrecy.
Well, I guess when she had that next baby, that's going to be... oh, wow. That's going to be a big one on television when she has the next baby because everybody's going to be wondering if the baby is dark. So... they will be in the news again.
Absolutely. Oprah can come do a follow-up, do like an unveiling. See how dark, how much pigmentation are we talking this time around.
Right.
The lack of security, I think, is hugely important. Just the lack of, we said black lives do not value or not value, do not matter in a system of white supremacy. Non-white lives do not matter in a system of white supremacy.
Right.
Anywhere in the known universe. not just in Minnesota with George Floyd. I thought it was particularly tacky when he said, we have to have compassion, talking about his white family members. We have to have compassion for them, you know, because they're in this position and the press, you know, can be tough. And Oprah even pushed back a little bit like, wait a minute. These are powerful white people. What do you mean we have to have compassion? They're practicing racism and then lying about it and not, and we should be compassionate for them. Like, come on, come on. That's one where I would point to and be like, see there, that's how you end up being confused and suicidal. You got a white man here who's holding your hand and then practicing racism at the same time, like saying we got to be compassionate for the racists too. We got to be compassionate because they're in a tough
right. Line.
There's no justification for them practicing racism, period. I don't care how tough their spot is and the tabloids, what they're going to write about them. That is not an excuse for practicing. What does that have to do with fussing about how dark the baby is going to be? Come on. Come on. Come on.
Right.
Be logical. Let's see.
Yeah, so that's the script. They just don't like that black, do they?
White genetic annihilation, Dr. Welsing.
Annihilation, yeah.
Let's see. Clip number five. It can again, now, this is the white man who's supposed to be clearing up confusion. Prince Harry continues.
And I think the biggest turning point for me was and it didn't take very long, because it was actually right at the beginning, was, okay, this union, us, me being, having a girlfriend, was going to be a thing. Of course it was. But I never expected, or I never thought...
Because she was a mixed race?
No, just the two of us to start with. I hadn't really thought about the mixed race piece because I thought, well, firstly, you know, I've spent many years doing the work mm-hmm. and doing my own learning. But my upbringing and the system of which I was brought up in and what I've been exposed to, I wasn't aware of it to start with. But my God, it doesn't take very long to suddenly become aware of it.
Yeah, because you said you really weren't aware of unconscious bias and all that that represents until you met me.
Yeah, sad as it is to say, it takes living in her shoes in this instance for a day or those first 8 days to see where it was going to go and how far they were going to take it.
And get away with it.
And get away with it and be so blatant about it. That's the bit that shocked me. We're talking about the UK press here, right? And this... And the UK is my home. That is where I was brought up. So, yes, I've got my own relationship that goes back a long way with the media. I asked for calm from the British tabloids once as a boyfriend, once as a husband, and then once as a father.
So when I asked the question, why did you leave, the simplest answer is...
lack of support and lack of understanding.
So I want clarity. Was the move about getting away from the UK press, because the press is, you know, is everywhere, or was the move because you weren't getting enough support from the firm?
It was both.
Both.
Yeah.
Did you blindside the Queen?
No. I've never blindsided my grandmother. I have too much respect for her.
So where did that story come from?
I hazard a guess that it probably could have come from within the institution.
Mm. Well, what is particularly striking is what Megan shared with us earlier, is that no one wants to admit that there's anything about race or that race has played a role in the trolling and the vitriol. And yet, Megan shared with us that there was a conversation with you about Archie's skin tone.
Mm-hmm.
What was that conversation?
That conversation I'm never going to share. But at the time it was awkward. I was a bit shocked.
Can you tell us what the question was?
No, I'm not comfortable sharing that.
Okay.
But that was right at the beginning, right?
Like, what will the baby look like?
Yeah, what will the kids look like?
Yeah, what will the kids look like?
But that was right at the beginning when she wasn't going to get security, when members of my family were suggesting that she carries on acting because there's not enough money to pay for her and all this sort of stuff. Like, there were some real obvious signs before we even got married that this was going to be really hot.
Mm. So in conclusion, if you'd had the support, you'd still be there?
Without question.
Yeah.
I'm sad that what's happened has happened. Mm. But I know, and I'm comfortable knowing, that we did everything that we could to make it work. And we did everything on the exit process the way that it should have been
done.
With as much respect.
Oh, my God. We just did everything we could to protect yeah. them.
And that'll wrap up our sound clips there. Any thoughts on the last bits of audio that we heard Prince Harry saying that he would never divulge information about the persons who said the comments about the children being too dark?
Right. You're not going to tell that. And she ain't either, but she could tell it if she wanted to, but she's going to do what her husband tell her to do. If they don't want to talk about it, you know, they don't want to give up no names, so you can't force them. Yeah, so. But we got more to come with Megan, because she got to have this next baby, and we got to have all this controversy around her baby. But we're not finished with Megan yet. And I wonder how, he said they didn't get enough support from the family. I wonder what kind of support we're talking about. I wonder if that financial support. So, that's all I see.
Context of White Supremacy, Area 8, with Renethia Tate joining us live to discuss the royal tragedy. If you have questions, comments, I don't know how this is impacting folks, people that are seeing this, because there's so much propaganda, scandal and the like, the Hate U Give, promoting these tragic arrangements and interracial relationships are the best thing ever. So I don't know if this is greatly disrupting that narrative, or just, you know, people kind of, oh, this is just kind of some live entertainment for the week, and then, you know, on to the next thing. But this can be used, I would hope, as an illustration. Like, wow. And it's not just the person that you're in the arrangement with, right? In this case, if you're a non-white female and you have a white husband, it is, and she's saying, and we had a guest on the program before, Elaine Kim, Dr. Elaine Kim, she's a non-white female, so-called Asian. She was married to a white man. They got divorced. And she said, one of the key lessons is you are marrying a family of white people, which guarantees you are marrying some racist in-laws. Guaranteed, if this white fellow or white woman has, you know, white family members, white parents, white grandparents, white aunties and cousins, oh yeah, some of those folks are racist, if not all. So that's going to be a problem too. That's what Dr. Elaine Kim, that's exactly what you heard from Meghan Markle. It might, even if Prince Harry had done everything perfect, which we don't think is the case, but even if that had been, you got relatives coming in. How dark is this little thing going to be? I mean, I don't know if we want to. I mean, that shit was like, wait a minute. That's, I thought that was my in-law. Like, whoa, we supposed to be family. Like, you supposed to be helping me plan the shower and everything. Like, what do you mean? That's what you can look forward to. Understanding what it means to be white. The number 720-716-7300. The code 564-9443#. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Whew. Now, see, I have to make sure I get this in. Lots of folks ready to talk, and I've said this for years. We've been on the program for 12 years. There is no way people can tell. Dr. Welsing did the Welsing Institute for like 30 years, so And neither of us solved the problem. So anyway, we've been on the air for 12 years. And I said consistently, we get very excited to talk about Area 8. And I said, all of that is fine and dandy, but I mean, wow, like workplace racism. That's something we should be excited to talk about, like solving problems on the job. How about education? Like, man, this past year, how much school has been disrupted? Education? That's something right. We should be excited to talk about, not just bedroom activity. And the reason I say that, Dr. Welsing said 12 years ago, even after all of the prediction of, well, not prediction, but her commentary about Princess Diana and all the rest of it, white genetic annihilation, she said, hey, be careful about just being engaged in scintillating conversation about Area 8. A lot of people enjoy talking about sexual intercourse anyway. That can just be a little form of entertainment, kind of soap opera-ish, as opposed to the business of replacing white supremacy with justice in all areas of people activity. That's it. Folks who dialed in, if you have a question for Ms. Tate, line should be open. That's not it at all. Let me do an order here. The person who called in, one caller in New Jersey, victim of racism in New Jersey. If you have a question, proceed.
Hey, how you doing, Gus? And the guest. Wow, very interesting. I haven't really been too concerned about the Meghan Markle thing. But it was real interesting about she was willing to sacrifice herself and the baby, you know. Don't protect me and my child, you know, protect my husband. That was very interesting. To the guests, your advice for me. Next month, my sister is involved in a tragic arrangement. She is getting married to a white man. I come from a family that is, more confused than myself about racism. I just recall one of my aunts, basically very celebratorial about my sister getting involved with this white man as if it was just some real great accomplishment. My sister is, she's a very good woman, you know, in my opinion. Definitely confused. I wanted some advice on how do I go about, maintaining a relationship with my sister and her new husband.
Well, you said what kind of relationship you gonna have?
How do I go about? Because I mean, if there is a child that comes out of this union, I mean, that will be my nephew. So, you know, I'm just kind of,
there's nothing you can do. She's in a fantasy. Your sister, that's your sister.
Yes, my sister. Yes.
Yeah, she's in a fantasy right now, and then she's about to get married. So I just go along to get along. But she's in a fantasy, and she'll wait. It's going to be, the rug going to be pulled off from under her, and, you know, just like they did with Meghan. If things look good one time, then the real stuff come out. Yeah, but I did talk to some women that were married to white men, and I knew some of them last pretty long too. I got several girlfriends that married a white man, and they had kids and look like it's normal. Look like they having a normal family life, and they happy. But really, one of them is the master. And the black female, she she's the maid, like the master and his slave.
You know, and I have another question, and I'll close. And I also have another friend, black female that I've dated. She's married to a white man, and I found like doing the time like Trayvon Martin and, you know, all the police executions of black males and females. She found it, you know, she always basically went on social media and found the need to defend her white in-laws. Did you see that in your, did you see that behavior in your friends? And also,
what kind of behavior you said?
When there were racial tensions going on, like, you know, police shootings, this black female, you know, always would take to social media and just basically profess a, you know, world love you, everybody should love each other, and how great her in-laws was. And also, my last question, my sister also made a statement that I had to correct, but I correct through my mother. She said, you know, when her wedding was coming, you know, I hope, you know, don't, she made a reference to the family, you know, basically not coming to her wedding, being ghetto. And, you know, that just kind of upset me, you know, was it, you know, so she's not worried about her other in-laws coming to the wedding being racist, but she's more worried about us not coming to the wedding being ghetto. So those are my last two questions. I just wanted your opinion on both of those subjects.
Yeah, but her nose is open right now. She got a white man. And so she ain't going to listen to too much of nothing until she get married. Because that's what the fantasy is. She got to get married. That's her fantasy. So now that rug is going to, he going to pull that rug away from us, you know, but it's going to take a little time. But he will pull the rug, just like what happened to Megan. They pull the rug from underneath you, let you know that you are black. Yeah. Mm. I hope I answered that.
Much obliged.
Yes, you did.
Victim in New Jersey.
Okay.
Ghetto black people ruin many a wedding. Incidentally, the suggestion that I've given out, we've had a number of victims who've shared about having family members who marry someone classified as white. I think, and you even heard this from Meghan Markle, she said she was isolated. That was part of her mental health demise. She was isolated. She said they took her passport, driver's license, all those things, so she wasn't able to just come and go as she pleased, and she's just stuck here around these racists, can't get any help, people lying to her and stuff, accusing her of things, all the rest of it, but having you isolated, that, in my opinion, happens so frequently with a non-white person when they're in these tragic arrangements. The white person will end up isolating them, where they are severed from their family members and friends who could kind of check on them and could kind of see the dynamics, who could, someone you could reach out to for help if things are not going well. That happens frequently. So one thing that I suggest is value that relationship. It doesn't mean that you have to be best friends and text everything. I would try to make sure that you can maintain constructive, healthy contact so that, as Ms. Tate said, when they pull the rug out, when they begin to practice racism, white supremacy, if they want someone to talk to, hey, oh, I remember a victim in New Jersey. My brother told me about this. He kind of pulled my coat to this real early on. Let me reach out to him and make it so that it's receptive, not in a talking down to the person or what have you, but out of concern for their safety. You are my sister. I love you. I'm concerned about you. I'm looking out for your best interest. Hey, call me if there's any, you know, whatever it is. If that day ever comes, call me, and not for I told you so and da 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 da, but safety.
That's the way that I position it, because that's what the racists want, to get that person isolated where they're totally cut off from everybody, and then they can just, bam, go to work and totally groom and liberate that person. We've seen that pattern consistently. Let's see. Person that called in.
Yeah.
0889. Did you have a question for Ms. Tate?
Yes, I do, Gus. I was out of the interview that when I listened to Harry, I don't think, now tell me if you agree or disagree, but I don't think Harry, and I know he wasn't being honest with Megan. This is why I say that. Because I remember 30 years ago, I did like a survey when I was in college. I talked to whites and I asked them a question. Now, this was 30 years ago. I said, how would your family feel if you got involved with a black person? And all the white students at that time said that they wouldn't do it because their family would kick them out the house and they don't have no place to live. And I said, well, they're being honest. And also, too, when Harry said, there was one part in the interview when Harry said that there's no racism in England. I'm trying to go back to when I saw on TV. But then again, he said the only racism was the paparazzi. And I said, well, that's a lie. He's not being honest. And then the other part I picked up was when he said he didn't know his family was going to feel that way. And I knew that that wasn't being honest because his family had to tell him how they felt before he even married her. So they had to say something about their race. And also, too, the other part where I felt what Harry. Yeah. And I'm leading into it. And also, too, I forgot where I was. Well, anyway, I think, tell me if you believe what I believe. I think at the end of the, when this is all said and done, because I think that Harry's the most powerful person, I think that all she has to do is divorce Meghan and go back to England and marry a white woman and live happily ever after. Do you think that they're going to end up in divorce? Because I think that's what's going to happen, in this relationship when everything is said and
done. Yeah, it's possible. Yeah, because, but I have seen marriages with white people go a long time with black people. I have seen that too. But it seems like after the kids get grown and, they kind of break up a little bit in husband and wife after the kids get older.
Right, and they suffer all them years, right. And the black people suffer in these relations. I was saying, Ms. Tate, do you think that the black people, they try to end up suffering all those years with that white person, in the family,
Yeah.
With dealing
it's
with
like
that
a
white
slave
family.
And a master. It's a master-slave relationship.
Exactly.
That's what it is, the master and slave.
Mm-hmm.
They say that the white man can get away with a lot of stuff when he's married to a black woman. He can get away with a lot of stuff.
But
he can't get away with if she was white, if the lady was white. If she was white. But if he marry a black female, he can do a lot of stuff.
Okay.
And some don't do nothing at all. Let the black female go working.
Uh-huh.
I had a friend, where the black female was the one that was working and he was taking care of the kids.
Right.
But
right.
He wasn't doing nothing but around the house.
And if a black man did that, they, under the system, they call us shiftless, lazy, and talk about us, he's a do-nothing. You need to leave him.
Right.
That's what the system does. That's exactly what it does.
Much obliged. Thank you. Oh, did you have more, Ms. Tate?
No, I'm finished.
Oh, okay. Groovy. Much obliged, good sir. Thank you for dialing in to share. Let's see if we can nab the rest of the folks who dialed in. The number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. 2262. Last four digits, 2262. Did you have commentary?
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Hello. Thank you. Greetings, Gus. Greetings to Ms. Tate. Thank you for coming to speak to us. Do you think... what was that?
I said you're welcome.
yes, thank you. Do you think that with all the attention and all of the fallout from the situation with Harry and Meghan, that this could all be a production orchestrated by the Crown to... I mean, to some other racist means?
Do I think it's what now?
Do you think, like, all of the media attention and how this affects so many other different shows? And I believe Oprah said they were working on a mental health show with Harry. She's working on something with him. Do you think this can all be some kind of production?
Yeah, they coming up with ideas, sound like to me, and or how they're going to do this thing. Sound like it's going to be, I don't know. I don't know. I just, well, I don't know. I had to think about that one.
Thank you.
Hello?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for your answer. My second question is, you said that you have non-white female friends who are engaged in tragic arrangements with white men.
Yes.
Are these white men at a high social status, or are they on the lower social status? And they live off.
I think they're on the lower. I think it's lower.
Mm. Okay, thank you.
It's lower. Yeah.
Thank you for that, man.
All right.
That'd be all for now, Gus. Thank you so much for taking my call.
All right.
For sure. For sure. I do think racist white supremacists, I do think that they make an effort to manipulate and control anything that happens, particularly anything that gets a lot of attention. So that certainly could be the case for this as well. So yeah, keep that in mind. And if they can keep non-white people confused about racism, white supremacy.
Yeah, that's the main thing. Keep us confused. Mm-hmm. Especially they came up with all these different sex categories. You know, transgender, all this, that ain't nothing but a bunch of mess and confusion. And black people are got caught in it, caught up in it. So that's it. Oh, man, that's the sex area of sex. The eighth area. Yeah, they got us confused. You know, females looking like males, males looking like females. It's just, yeah. And they start them off young, you know, and you go into the school system. And, you know, especially in high school, they got all these different sexes and all that. So it's nothing but confusion. Well, they keep going while we up here trying to get unconfused. They still running the world.
Running the world. known universe. Caller at 9029. Did you have a question for Ms. Tate?
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I hear you.
Yes. I have a cousin that's actually married to a white male, and I've been trying to maintain communication, being respectful, and as much as possible. One of the things, though, recently she put forward to me was had a discussion about black men and stating that she asked me, why are black men failing at everything, and what, why is it that black men just can't stand up? Now, my question to you is basically, is I feel like I've never heard her speak in quite this manner, but I also feel like it may have something to do with her poor relationship with other black men in our family, specifically her father. And that's part of the reason why she is with a white male. But I'm trying my best to maintain a level of civility with her, because the question that she proposed was frustrating. But how do you propose that I may go around and kind of like still maintain these conversations with her without coming across and like, obviously she's with a white man, so I have to be mindful of how my dialogue is, but I'm still going to be honest. But I'm trying to figure out how to navigate that, because
start asking questions. Just ask questions. Mm-hmm. That's how you navigate, just ask her questions. Nothing hard, something simple. And get her to, if you want her to stay open so she'll talk, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So I would just ask her some questions.
Well, I've been doing that. The only thing that, and tell me if I'm wrong for this, I disengage when I she asks me questions and I give her answers, and then I ask her questions, and she will say something to the degree, I think, when it gets a little bit too difficult for her, per se. She'll say something along the lines of, well, I don't want to hear facts and statistics. I just want to know why. And like, if we're not dealing with like numbers and some kind of statistics and some logic, I really don't know if I could even have a conversation with her. And I've been trying to be respectful and disengage as soon as that starts coming up, where, it's like, if you're going to tell me that facts don't matter to you in a discussion, then I don't know. I'm just walking away from the table. So that's where I'm kind of stuck with the conversation a little bit most of the time. And it's a little frustrating, but I'm trying to make sure that
Could ask the questions, though. You could.
Right.
Are you happy? Ask her that. Are you happy?
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of questions you can ask.
I understand what you're saying. I appreciate that. I'll take my time and contemplate a little bit more on the questions I'll ask her going forward.
Because you try to maintain a relationship with her? That's your sister?
She's my cousin. I just don't want her cousin. To feel like... Yeah, I don't want her to... I've known her since we, since we were children, and I just don't want her to feel like she's isolated or by herself, because I don't know if this is, something that happens to everybody else, but I've noticed that most relationships like that, they end up being secluded and separated from other black people. And since she's with a black man, since she's with a white man, it's very rare that she's around other black men. And I'm pretty much that only outlet. And I don't want to lose her.
Right.
Just because of that.
Yeah, I'd like to know what's going on in that bedroom.
Who knows?
That's what I want to know. What's going on there? What they doing? Right.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
much obliged for your question. I again say the same thing. I always think it's great to keep the lines of communication open. And if she's like sincerely asking questions, and you know, there's a desire to learn and be truthful, follow logic and evidence. She says, you know, why is it that black males suck at everything? You know, why are you all such lame, such losers? Well, let's see, you know, why is it? Let's see if that's true. And then even as we're investigating this, now, what do you mean fail? We get an explanation for that. Why are black males fail at everything? And then let's look at the data and see, is that black males are just losers and don't try and all the rest of it? Or is there something awry here that's causing all of this? That would be something. But yeah, that would be spectacular. A little black misandry. We couldn't get a program in without a little teaspoon of black misandry. Let's see. Other folks dialed
right
in with a hand up. Let's see. The person, 1159. Last four digits, 1159. Last four digits, 1159. You just listening, or did you?
Oh, I'm sorry, I was on mute. Greetings, Gus, Ms. Tate, callers and listeners. My question, Ms. Tate, is from your book, and I'm just wondering if any of these women may have reached out to you maybe months or years later to perhaps thank you for interviewing them. Because perhaps
no, I hadn't heard.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Oh yeah, because I was just hoping that maybe at least one of them or some of them may have come out of their confusion or realized that that they have been damaged severely by their tragic arrangement. So I'm just wondering if anyone has reached out to you to maybe thank you or with some realization that hey.
No, they haven't. Yeah, the interviews that I did was back in 1992 when I started talking to the black females. That was in 1992. So I told them that I was writing a book and, you know, and they agreed to talk to me over the phone. And, but that was the last I seen of them. I mean, I heard of the girl. That was the last I heard of from them.
Thank you. And thank you for the book. It's a huge resource and asset to those who are attempting to solve the problem and understand the problem. And thank you, Gus, for the show.
Okay. Yes.
We do what we can.
Did you ask a question?
I think that was his only question, just about, you know, if you'd been in touch with any of the ladies again. That was
okay.
Yeah, that was the only one he had
in the book, or the white men in the book. No, none of them. But I had plenty of tapes to wind the type out. I had a lot of tapes because I taped them back during the over the telephone. I was running the tape recorder. Wow. And that was the last I heard from them.
Fire and forget, as they say. Our caller from a blocked number, if you have a question for Ms. Tate, proceed.
Okay.
Hello, Gus and Ms. Tate.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sending me your book. I'm all the way here and in London, and it's 2 a.m. I've been dying to get on the couch. Literally, considering white supremacy is global. But my question to you is, I'm a firm believer that like tragic arrangements lead to extreme psychological damage, and some of it may be irreversible. So do you think black women who engage in tragic arrangements with white males experience some irreversible, if not severe, damage?
Say what, the last part again? What is that?
If black women who are engaged in tragic arrangements, do they experience irreversible psychological damage as a result of their tragic arrangement?
Yeah, that's why I need to know what's happening in the bedroom. Because that's where the psychological damage just starts, right there. That's why when they talk to me about a white man, I want to know what they're doing in the bedroom. Because that's what my book is about, you know. We tell it all. So I'm interested. You said her mental health. Yeah, but that and what's connected to that mental health is what they're doing in their bedroom.
And thank you so much. I have one more follow-up question. And this is a direct result of what you were talking about earlier about how black males are depicted as immense losers in the society. And do you think that that projection and that archetype that has been established by the white supremacists, do you think that is one of the reasons why black females may flock to white males? Of course, they seek comfort and safety, but is it the fact that...
Well, you know, first of all, white men are promoting that. And they promoting it. You know, you see each other on the TV and you got all these biracial families, a black female with a white man. So they pushing that, you know. So, but they just, you know, and time will tell. Time will tell. But we could learn something from the white men, because I interviewed them in the book. We can learn a little something from the 13 white men that I interviewed. That kind of get you to show you how they think. Yeah, so get the book if you don't already have it. And read some of them interviews with them white men.
No, I have the book, and I definitely enjoy the interviews with the whites. Thank you for doing this work, and it definitely opened my eyes to the trauma that is going on within the area of sex.
Yes.
Much obliged, sir. It's 2 a.m. in London. We got the obligatory timestamp. Oh, that is awful. I'll say that is dedication. I'll retract. That is dedication to solving the problem. I think I've said that a few times when we've had our international participants. Like, oof, I don't know if I would be up at 3 a.m. to talk counter-racism. Like, man, I need my rest. Much obliged for participating, sir. And in fact, our Global Sunday Talk is this Sunday. So it should be easier. That program is at 7 p.m. So it is not, you won't have to be up, you know, the middle of the night or the crack of dawn to participate, 7 p.m. And we'll have folks from other folks from your part of the world to chat and share. I will say that, incidentally, non-white people in general, I think, suffer many of the exact same side effects, symptoms of being victims of white supremacy. And I certainly think that non-white males, non-white females, period, not just black females, non-white males, non-white females suffer many of the exact same psychoses from being involved in tragic arrangements. I think we heard the sound clip, Dr. Eddie Moore Jr. talking about soothing lotion of white women. So, yeah, lots of... mental psychoses around Area 8. Let's see. Other folks, a different person that dialed in from a block number. If you had a question for Ms. Tate, line should be open.
Greetings. May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Greetings. Yes, I'm calling from Japan. Good morning.
Morning.
I have not read your book, but I've been listening with interest to this discussion. So I wanted to thank you for your insights. And I have, I don't know if it's exactly a question, but just my situation, and I don't know that it fits necessarily, but I feel intuitively, I feel a lot of the same characteristics. My parents, you know, my mother is a black female. My father is a non-black male. what would be classified as Hispanic, but Hispanic is not a racial classification, but this is someone I've never seen him that I wouldn't think that he was a white man, but it's pretty, I don't know, some sort of Southern European or Greek or some, I don't know. But in any case, almost there. Is it possible that that same dynamic that's between, let's say, white males and non-white or black females, that that could be mirrored in such a relationship? Because I feel a lot of things that I hear, and that I feel a lot of that is there, and I don't, we don't call them racist, but I just want to know, can it, is it possible for that to be mirrored in that sort of a relationship?
I didn't hear you. Only thing I heard really what you said, relationship.
Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm having some connection problems.
I heard
No, I can hear you, but
yeah, let's try it again because I can hear you.
Is it possible that it's not a, it's not that sort of a white and non-white relationship, but I see a lot of the same characteristics being played out, and I'm just wondering how you explain that. How you, I mean, we're talking about the that sort of master-slave relationship that's there, the isolation from other family members that's there, the black woman keeping those secrets in order to the self-sacrifice for the male, all of that is there, and to be perfectly honest, my, again, so-called Hispanic father, there have been comments over the years about black, obviously we've all grew up in New York in the same neighborhoods, but there's slight tension maybe. And so I'm just wondering if it's proper to view such a relationship through those lenses, through the same lens, or not?
Well, you said it right. You said tragic arrangement. And that's the best way to describe it, that these are tragic relationships. Tragic.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Okay, then. Thank you very much for your assistance, and thank you for the show. I'll mute myself and just continue listening. Thank you very much, and thank you, Gus, and to all the other callers.
Okay.
Sure.
Thank you.
Japan. Wow. Oof. Early there, too. I'll sit before we nab our next caller. Briefly, I think I just spoke with Mr. Fuller earlier today, and he was talking about how we are not, no one on the planet is encouraged to have constructive relationships. That's just not what the system of white supremacy is about. The system of white supremacy is about mistreatment, and particularly mistreatment of black people. So that's why I suspend. That's why a lot of times that element is there. Number one, we're in a system that's about mistreatment, period. White people even mistreat a lot of white people. But then it's a system of white supremacy. So it's especially, let's make sure to mistreat the niggers. So many people pick up on that dynamic, that that's what black people are here for, to be stomped on, abused, mistreated, especially in the bedroom. Let's see. Other folks.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi. I had a question. I really appreciated everything that you guys were talking about today. I was wondering if, Ms. Tate, you were going to, or if you've done any work in terms of, like, relationships between black women and white women, like how black women view white women and view themselves, and even
it is a little bit of information in my book about what we call it, anti-sex. See, that's what it's called, from the code. And I talked to a girl that had a girl who was in a relationship with a white woman. And it wasn't nothing but a bunch of confusion. You know, she was sleeping. She thinks she being loyal to the other female, and she's out there having sex with males too. And the whereas the gay girl, she was disappointed. So it's really a nothing but confusion. Cause she confused. I thought you like females, cause she's a female, and then she ends up, the white woman ends up with a male. I don't know if he was white or black, but she ends up with a male, and she came back and told the girl about it, and nothing more. She was just confused. So even when the bisexual or the anti-sexual relationships, they still confused. Now, you know the person is confused real bad when they into an anti-sexual relationship. They really messed up. Confused. That's the best way to say it, just confused.
Thank you. I had another follow-up question.
Go ahead.
What about the relationship, like the women who you interviewed, did they ever talk about how their relationships were with their white husband, like family that were white women? Like, did they get along?
The girls in the book, they were not married. They were all single. Everybody was single. The white men were single. I believe some of them were single, too, that I interviewed. Everybody was single. And that was back in, you know, like I said, around 1992 when these interviews took place.
Okay, yeah, thank you.
All right.
Much obliged, ma'am. Appreciate your questions. Let's see. Retired firefighter in Florida. If you had a question for Ms. Tate, she'd be with us.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings, Ms. Tate. I was going to ask a couple of questions about what I believe is the former Duchess. That conversation seems to be kind of like outdated, and I'm hearing a lot of people calling in, and there are voices that I haven't ever heard before, and I think that's probably more important than what I have to ask. So continue on, Gus. Continue on, ma'am. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Much obliged, retired firefighter in Florida. Let's see. Thomas in New York, did you have a question?
Running to the phone. Hey, how you doing? Good evening, everyone. Good evening to the guests. Can I be heard?
Sir. Yes, sir, we can hear
Hello?
You.
Hello? Oh, okay. You know, I hadn't listened to this song. This is more of the interview that I've listened to so far, to see clips. This question for both of y'all, because besides the color issue, what stood out to me was, what do y'all think she meant when she didn't want to go to Harry? She said the weight of the world is on his shoulders. And then she went on to say that she's more concerned about his safety than her own and her children. What do you guys think from that?
She's trying to. Well, she's married in that royal family. I guess that's probably why she tried to get out, trying to get out of that royal mess. You know, yeah. So, that's what I think. I think she don't want to be bothered. You know, she was trying to get protection for her little baby. You know, and you can understand that she want her kids to be protected. Yeah, so.
Okay.
I guess,
I hope I answered your question.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, John.
I'm just going to give my quick thought. The weight of the world, those metaphors are always, you know, something to investigate. It almost had, they used the term colonial in the interview quite a bit, and saying that the press talked about Meghan Markle and had a colonial tone to it. It almost sounded like they were using that to mean racist, colonial, racist. So to me, it had a colonial sound to it. He's got the weight of the world on his shoulders. Like, this is a white man with the white man's burden, and he's got to do all this work, and then I've got to come and burden him with, oh, I'm feeling suicidal because of your racist family members. Like, that's kind of a little bit of how it felt. And then the part where she said that she just wanted security for him, I think in the context it was, she was saying that she understood that they were saying, hey, security for your offspring and you is not going to be possible, that she was just resigned for that. But she said she felt like, hey, he was born into the family and he's under a threat. His life is being jeopardized and all the rest of it. Like, you know, hey, make sure at least my husband is safe. You don't have to protect us, but just keep my husband safe. That, I think we had kind of talked about that before, that kind of Black lives do not matter. Non-white lives do not matter. Even non-white children. Supposed to be women and children first. It's, exact opposite. White man first. Just make sure that he's straight and, you know, we'll get by as we get by.
Yeah.
Now, the comments you guys made on that, she was confused. I disagree with that. She reminds me of a mixed race guest that Gus had years ago, Lacey Schwartz, who was acting like she was confused, but she was very well aware.
Yeah, I can't hear it. He's mumbling.
I'm sorry, my baby, my headphones. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now, but you sounded like he was mumbling.
No, I was just saying, I disagree with the comment that she's confused. I don't think she's confused.
Oh, you don't think Meghan is confused?
No, I don't.
Well, she confused. The reason why I said that is because somebody in the royal family is talking to her about the color of the babies that she's having. That's racism right there. Talking about the color of the babies. This next one, they worried about this one. This next one is, you know, because it might come out dark.
Yeah, I don't think she's confused about that. My last question is, didn't someone say something? This is Meghan Markle's second white husband. She has a white father. She marries into the whitest family. Why should black males care about what's going on with Meghan Markle?
I agree with you. I don't think y'all should care about that either. But we're just listening to the news. It's always, well, you know, it's okay to listen to the news, but yeah, this is a female thing. It's a female thing. Getting married and protecting the baby and all that. That's female stuff.
Got you. Okay. And my last question, Gus, you know, this is a real quick one. What do you think about, this is totally off topic. What do you think about, what's your thoughts on black women being feminine? And I'll mute my line. Thank you.
Say, wait a minute, say it again.
What are your thoughts on black women being feminine?
What are my thoughts on black women being feminine? Is that right?
Feminists.
Feminist.
Oh, feminist. Okay. Well, say, what do I think?
Yes, ma'am.
I don't know. What do you mean? What do I think about black women being feminists? Is that the question?
I think so. Yes, ma'am.
Well, black females got a lot to do. They got a lot of reading to do if they want to see a change. That's the way I see it. If we want to see some kind of change, we got to make some changes. And we got to stay out of the bed with white men. That's what we need to do, stay out of the bed with white men. Read the book. You'll see what they think about us. And stay out of the bed with them. As far as them being a feminist, well, white people still in charge. They still in charge. They ain't gonna do nothing to their status quo. So white men and women, they still in charge. To help answer your question?
Hello? I suspect he's taking a moment to get his mute, but I suspect that may have answered the question. I think that was it. Yep, that's what I thought. I think.
Oh, okay.
I think Dr. Welsing, she used to tell a story. It was a black musician that was his line. People would ask, what's going on? The white man is still in charge. White man and white woman, still in charge. From the UK to Washington State. Let's see, the caller 5049. Last four digits, 5049. Did you have a question for Ms. Tate?
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
I just have one question. What do you guys make of the fact that Meghan Markle mentions that she never heard anything firsthand? She always heard everything from Harry, it seems like. That's my
From
question.
Where?
She seems to have only heard things through Harry's, through Prince Harry's.
Oh,
words.
Through Harry. Oh. Well, somebody in that royal family is not treating her right. See, she was in a fantasy while she was getting married. And then, now the real deal is here. This race thing. Now she got to deal with the race thing. And she don't want to deal with the race thing because she want to go to the hospital. She don't want to deal with racism. She wants to go to the hospital. And take care of her mental health. I'm not saying that she shouldn't take care of her mental health. She could do that on the weekends. But Monday through Friday, she should be asking white people questions. That's how I see it.
Interesting. Interesting. Let's see. The person 2363, last four digits 2363.
Hello. Good evening, Gus and Ms. Tate. I have one question. I wanted to know, like, what techniques did you use to get these white men to be honest and open with you when you interviewed them? Because, you know, I mean, we all know that white men are very good at lying and being evasive. So I was just wondering, what techniques did you use to get them to be open and honest?
Well, it was a long time ago that I talked to the white men, but I was in college, and
I was in the Washington, D.C. area. That's where the research started. And they had this a service where you can call up and meet a single black, it's called single black male or single black female in touch, looking for a single black male. It was, they had a newspaper, you know, that they had, that we would, and they could check into our boxes and all this kind of stuff. So that's how I got the white men. It was, they just came up to me when I opened up my mailbox. All these white men was inside of my mailbox asking me questions and stuff. So they walked right into it. So I got their names and numbers, and that's how it started. I was able to get their names and numbers, and we were talking over the phone. And but I didn't tell them that I was going to do a book. I didn't tell them none of that. I told the black females that I met, I told them that I was having a book. But with the white men, yeah, they just came to my mailbox. And that's, so I said, well, since so many of them responding to me, let me just interview them. Because I was going to write my book anyway, so I was able to just interview them. It was easy, because white men are chasing after black females in some cases.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for sharing that.
All right.
Indeed. Let's see. Caller from a blocked number. Did you have a question for Ms. Tate?
No, you already, I already asked my question, Gus. You can, yes, thank you.
My fault. In Japan, yes, sir. Let's see. Emmy, namaste. Did you have a question for Ms. Tate?
Greetings, Gus. And greetings to all the callers. Hello, Ms. Tate. Thank you for being on the call and answering that question. I guess I'll pose a question to both of you, get both of your opinions about it, because I don't know if it's...
Can you talk up a little bit? Can you talk up?
Yes. Can you hear me? Is this better, like this?
Yes.
Okay. I said thank you for being on the call, and I'll pose the question to both of you, because I don't know if these things have been talked about explicitly, but two things are from Harry's part of the conversation. He said, well, he and Oprah are working on a mental health series. I thought that was really interesting, because nowhere does he really, really address, I mean, I know I haven't heard the whole thing, but he doesn't actually address Megan's mental health situation in the commentary that I did hear him say, and in what capacity. And does that mean that it's been known that Megan has had mental health issues for a long time? And how did he and Oprah even get on this? Like, how is Harry even qualified to do a series on mental health? I was just curious about that, what y'all thought about that. And then the second thing is, he said it was kind of a slip, because Ms. Tate, you keep saying that black women need to know how white men think. And he said, you know, pretty much what I got, he said, it was fine when they said my baby wasn't going to have any security. It was fine when he said my wife wasn't going to have any security. But it really hit me when they said I wasn't going to have any security, because I was born into this. And that's pretty much when it got real. And I was just wondering if you could illuminate a little bit about how white men think, and kind of maybe tie that into what he said. And if none of that works, if you could just tell me, as a black female, I mean, I'm not interested in white men or males or anything like that, but just so I can know, how do white men think? You know, let me know that. Thank you.
They think, and how they think about us is important. And they think we are play toys. They toy around, want to play with us. And then they, when they get tired of you, they
throw you to the curb and get the next black person, throw you to the curb. Yeah. Yeah, that's how I see it with white men, what you learn from them. Yeah, you can just, you know, they act, you know, in the book, I had a series of questions that I asked the white men. And then I was able to write it out. But like one white man said, black women make my blood boil. Now, that's what he said, that we make his blood boil. So that means he get extremely excited dealing with a black person, a black female. And that's because black females, according to the code, we are girls. And when we get older, we come into being ladies. But right now, we are girls caught up in a fantasy world. And we got, you know, with the pretty baby, if I had a white man, maybe I can get a pretty baby with good hair. That's the fantasy I'm talking about. If I just can get me a white man, I have me a little white baby. Or a mixed baby. But yeah, that's how white men think. They just, it's just something you learn from them. You learn what side of the fence you're on. And you learned, like one white man, I call him Mr. Clean, because he was talking like he want black females, including me, to be clean. He want us to be clean. So I call him Mr. Clean. So it's just interesting. Just get the book and, you can read all the interviews that I have with the white man and see what you pick up from that. It's, like I said, if you don't agree with some of the stuff that's in the book, at least you should walk away feeling suspicious of white men, racist white men. And if they're coming after you and they want to have sex with you, then they are suspects. Yeah, they're a suspect then if they want to come with you and have sex with you and all that. That's a racist, a suspect.
What her first question, I hope I answered
your question.
Her first question, she asked, what are your thoughts when Prince Harry, he only seemed to get really concerned when they talked about removing his personal security. He didn't seem as worried about, oh, wow, this is a big problem, when they removed security from Meghan Markle and said that his child, Archie, was not going to get security. It was only when they said, and you, Prince Harry, we're taking your security. It was, whoa, this is really wrong. Like, what's going on? Like she said, what do you make of that in terms of you know, what whose life is valued?
Right. See, and he ain't even helped us out with the race thing, with the races. You know, he haven't gotten the races to apologize to, or at least apologize to Meghan. Yeah, so he haven't even done that. So, yeah, he's out for himself. And then you got a wife talking about suicide and having babies. And yeah, it's just crazy. It's just crazy. Suicide, then having babies. Oh, man, it's just a mess.
That
so non-white females, those that, it's sad. It's just sad for black people, period, brown people too. It's just sad. But if we could just not get and let ourselves become confused, we can get somewhere. And if black females stay out of the bed with white men, that'd be something to see. Stay out that bed, not to see, but to know the impact of it.
Constructive impact, minimizing confusion, I think is super, super important. That's one, I guess, to answer one of the questions. I said in 2018, I was not, you know, real interested in the royal wedding and all of that, and I didn't sit around and watch it. And I think Miss Tate said way back then, you know, and that same thing she said tonight, that that's more of a female thing. Like, guys are not going to sit around and, oh, did you see Meghan Markle's dress? And, oh, it was meant like that is a female. Like, part of that whole fantasy of the wedding day and how all of that is built up. And even this time around, I am not someone who, you know, oh, I got to keep up with who Oprah is going to be interviewing next. And who is she talking like? No, that's not me either. I don't keep up with Meghan Markle and all their tabloid. The fact that racism was mentioned so many times explicitly, and they weren't even saying white privilege. She was saying racism pretty consistently. You heard that tonight. I'm just, as a attempted counter-racist student, scientist, I try to study racism, white supremacy, and particularly globally. Now, I certainly will say this could be a production. I say, hey, Harpo Studios is involved. It's a production. So that could be, you know, and I mean, hey, anything, racist, white supremacists will take anything and see how they can use it, manipulate it to strengthen their system. So anything, this included. All of that said, I mean, this could be some sort of, you know, scheme. Hey, we got everybody locked down. Let's do our 90-minute program. Racism has already been a big topic for a myriad of reasons. We'll inject racism and get this attention or what have you and make it a sham, draw some sympathy, and it'll be a ploy to get people to watch our podcast on mental health or, you know, whatever it is. I would only say, like, wow, that is interesting. Particularly, we had a lot of folks in London who just said, man, having that Donald Trump in office made it so easy to talk about racism, white supremacy, having a public figure like that and all the rest. Like, wow, this had the same effect. This little 90-minute interview, all people all over the world, not just that, you had white people getting fired. Piers Morgan, or I guess, yeah, that's pretty close to a firing, losing their job. White people don't get fired, they get transferred. But, I mean, he is out of not working on the studio because of this. People saying that, hey, accusing him of being racist, accusing him of minimizing her charges, accusing him of minimizing mental health concerns. That I thought was huge. You have a pregnant mother saying she is suicidal. That is a disgrace. I mean, that's horrible for the child. That's horrible, like, all the way around. Everyone should hang their head in shame. I mean, it should be, what can we do for you? Let's make sure that you're great. You're pregnant with child. Like, sit down. Let's not stress. It's the exact, I mean, that is a total disgrace. All of that said, it could be a production, but I'm, and I would say, wow, like, that is, like, expensive. Because, I mean, generally, it's all about promoting the Virginia Loving case and W. Kamau Bell and his white wife and, you know, President Obama and his white mother. It's all about the wonderful beautifulness of the interracial relationships, not, oh my Lord, this is a horror story and I'm about to kill myself and all these. I mean, that is like, whoa, that generally is not the front and center story of, you know, what all of this is about.
Well, Megan realizes she ain't white. you know, she ain't going to be accepted as a white woman, you know. So she whining. She's not going to be accepted like a white woman, so I don't know. It's still sad. It's still sad, though.
Hey, Gus, can I ask something?
Sad to be confused.
Interracial relationships are sad. Hang on one second, Thomas. And I will say that it is very common for people to conclude that non-white people are not victims. Very, very common. Anywho, wow, I cannot believe, I think we got all of our callers. Hopefully we did not miss anybody. I don't think we missed a hand question. Anybody that we missed totally? Grand, that's what I thought.
I was gonna ask my questions now.
Oh, I
guess that everybody went through.
I guess we did kind of. Yes, sir.
Yes. My first question was about the Duke, former Duke of Sussex, her husband. Do you have any comments on why he didn't prepare his wife for the issues and problems of the royal family, which has been in existence for over 1,000 years? Yes. Do you have an opinion on why he didn't prepare his wife for the problems that she would potentially have?
Yeah, just like I said before, you know, they pulled that rug off of me, so he let the rug get pulled too. You know, underneath his wife, she thought she was marrying, and she didn't think anything about no race. She thought that they accepted everybody, and he ain't trying to protect her either. No, something like that. You know, he's trying to protect her. That's what I said. He ain't protecting her.
And my other question do you think her life was in danger the moment that she was seen constantly with the prince? It would have been known that they were having sex with one another. Do you think her life was in danger at that point of time?
Oh, when he was courting her, when he was dating her.
Well, that's what they call it, courting. But I'm much more scientific on it. When they were having sex with one another, and he was basically attached sexually with her.
Yeah. Well, that is interesting, because he decided he wanted to make babies with her. So sometimes when white men mess with black females, they don't necessarily want you to have no baby. They don't want no baby. But in this case, I think Harry wants to make a family with her, you know. But I don't know why he didn't protect her from the mother races.
Last question.
Last question
would be, do you think after this interview that her life now is in imminent danger?
I don't think so. I don't think so. They having babies right now.
So, okay, well, I mean, I was the reason why I was asking that is because his mother, who was a white female, had problems entering into the quote unquote royal family, and at one point in time, there is some rumors that stated that the reason that this accident that she died in was not an accident at all. So with that history, with that particular family within that family. It was just my thoughts that her life would probably be in even more imminent danger after this interview, exposing a lot of things that people are now talking about around the world.
Oh, okay. So you like conspiracy theory?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I just wanted to know your thoughts, and you did answer. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought that was fascinating as well to have. They had the report. I think it came out the middle of last week. The royal family is very definitely not racist. I generally think that is constructive. If we live in a system of white supremacy, and the dominant reports of the day are white people having to refute charges of being accused of being a racist, that's what I'm saying the problem is anyway. So, seems like we might be, you know, stumbling in correct direction at minimum to get more people talking about and focused on racism, white supremacy as a serious, life-threatening problem, which it is. Pregnant woman talking about committing suicide. That is disgraceful. The height of disgrace. And that's exactly, they mentioned Serena Williams. You can connect that all the way through. They talked about her in the interview, and she talked about all the complications and things that she had in giving birth. She could have died. That right there, racism, white supremacy, that's one of the ways that it happens. Having all that stress and no support from your white in-laws, racist in-laws, and no security, no help from your racist husband. That's enough to cause some complications, make the whole childbearing experience stressful and not fun. SecretSexTalk.com. Visit the website, SecretSexTalk.com, to get Miss Renethia Tate's book. A lot of the information that we talked about tonight in the book, more detail, finding different ways of studying what it means to be white. Any last thoughts you wanted to leave folks with before we wrap things up, Miss Tate?
Nothing much other than to tell us to stay woke. Yeah, keep reading and stay woke and keep watching and seeing what's going on. We're going to probably hear more from Megan again when that baby born. That's going to be a mess. So we got time. They'll be on stage sooner or later.
For sure. For sure. We will
learn how we need to learn white men. We need to study them. They're something else.
Chad Wheeler to Prince Harry. They are something else, indeed.
Yes. To the Asians that were killed. I know you heard about that, the Asians.
Absolutely.
Being attacked.
Robert Aaron Long, free white and 21, they say, 21-year-old Robert Aaron Long. And then he said it wasn't racism. He's a sexual addict. That's why he had to go and kill these non-white people, six so-called Asian people, and then the other two. I think he did kill two white people, the other two. But he said it was not racism, white supremacy. It was because he is a sex addict. Anyway.
Hey, Gus, before we close, can I ask
violent.
Let's see.
It'll be fast. Because it's not even a question. It's just something to add to. I think that we are in the minority when we say that Harry threw Meghan Markle under the bus. Most people in the media and on social media is considering him a hero. So I just wanted to add that. So this situation isn't really waking black people up. That's all I wanted to add.
Much obliged. I'm not aware of any situation that does that. I think there is a reason that, what is Mr. Fuller? If you don't understand racism, white supremacy, what it is and how it works, everything else will confuse you. So I am not aware of a situation that, you know, clears up confusion for individuals who are not white. That's why you have to read and study. Hopefully these events, I think Dr. Welsing would say that, as opposed to just being emotional and trying to go from event to event where you can start to connect the dots and grasp why these things happen. If anything, you hope that these type of events will encourage people to stop and study, as opposed to just taking the, what will I say, rhetoric and propaganda when they talk about the wonder of interracial relationships and all that. Like, wait a minute, like, that did not sound wonderful, having a pregnant mom up here talking about suicide and then Aaliyah Taylor. Like, wait a minute, like, let me investigate a little bit more, and then maybe you stumble onto Miss Tate's book, Secret Sex Talk, or Pam, The Interracial Con Game. There is some black misandry there. But to study a little bit more, as opposed to just, you know, going with the normal narrative, and if anything, studying in depth racism, white supremacy, what it means to be white. I think that will go a long way to dispelling the notion of a charming white man, especially a charming white man who is not even providing security for his non-white infant and non-white mother, or certainly not seeming super motivated about getting security for non-white mother, non-white child. And not ratting. He's still sticking to the racist code. That was important. We talked about that this evening. Not snitching. Like, go ahead and give out. Why are we protecting racists? Like, this happens all the time. We give all kinds of anonymity and protections to racists. Why is that? Why should they be protected? Let's call them out so we can, maybe that'll help correct this behavior when we stop coddling them. Asking too much.
Why? Right.
Anywho, if anything, maybe if some of those people who, if this is not the prevailing view, well, then maybe that'll be the benefit of this broadcast, that I was not even enthused about this whole subject matter. Maybe that will be the benefit, that some of those people who are all interested in this subject matter will tune in and get to hear an alternate view. You all can share, if you're on social media or what have you, share the broadcast and tell folks to check it out. You even have some healthy tidbits from the interview. So if you didn't get to hear it, you can hear, get nice context to make an evaluation for yourself. And then we can kind of watch as things unfold. But yeah, all over the world, George Floyd, situation in Atlanta, Meghan Markle, racism, white supremacy, the conversation, as it should be. The conversation on the planet. That's it. We will wrap things up.
Yep.
Much obliged, Miss Tate, for hanging out once again. It has been a hoot to have you back on the broadcast. We'll have to do it again. SecretSexTalk.com. Thank you kindly for sharing some of your Wednesday evening.
All right, thank you. And thank your audience.
For sure, for sure. Be safe. Keep up the great work, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. Good night.
Good evening. Good evening. Context of white supremacy. We did our 3 hours. We'll be here tomorrow for the book club. And again, I think we should have our Sunday global talk. So we heard some of our international participants hanging out with us Thursday morning. Should be Sunday, like just earlier. 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Central, 12 noon Pacific. I guess for folks in the UK, that would be like 7 p.m. Eastern, I think. It would be Monday morning Japan time, early Monday morning Japan time. But that'll be Sunday, so we'll be able to revisit this. And wow, be lots of things to talk about by the time we get to Sunday. But tune in, compensatory call in Saturday as well. Anywho, much obliged for everyone tuning in. Very glad we included Pamela Evans-Harris' voice in the broadcast. She was a big, big fan of Renethia Tate, Pieces of a Puzzle. With that, much obliged. Glad we got to everybody who called in. Hope it was worthy of your Wednesday evening. tragic arrangements, interracial relationships, so-called, are sad. Sobriety with the best under conditions of white supremacy. We will need well-functioning brain computers to solve the problem. In addition to being sober, started this broadcast, Gusty easily could have died this past week just going outside to take the trash. The violence is extraordinary. Worldwide, it seems. I would try to hunker down. If you are going out for serious things, I would be very mindful of what is happening around you. If anything suggests danger, something untoward, this person doesn't quite look right, something about this situation doesn't feel right, honor those suspicions. Like, man, the danger level is extraordinary. So many people are armed. You should be thinking, if somebody is loud and hostile in public, they are probably armed. In fact, they may be with a whole group of armed folks who are looking to do harm. Be alert. Be looking for the exit. The hostility is real. All of that said, if you're going out, you're sober, you're buckled. If you're driving, you are not on the cell phone. We need all of our attention, and we are trying to minimize contact with the Mark Furmans of the known universe. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
A victim.
Man, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.